sukwini sanamhla awa awa sibona kwenzeka kanjani awa awa amantombazane.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters President James P. Hoffa stopped in Milwaukee to blast the Bush administration record on jobs loss and urge working and middle-class people to vote for John Kerry on November 2nd. Hoffa said politics is the key to protecting jobs.
This all starts with politics. I mean, we've got to go out and have an administration that believes in having a strong middle class, that believes we have to have a good middle class, that pays taxes, that supports the system, that consumes. That's the whole idea. The money comes in, people have good homes, good lives, America thrives.
As he spoke to reporters outside the former Kelly Docks manufacturing operation in Milwaukee that shut down despite being profitable in order to ship the jobs to Mexico for the cheap labor costs, Hoffa said it's vital that working people not sit out this election.
We cannot send good American jobs overseas, and this administration wants to send every job we have overseas. We've got to turn that around. Politics is the answer. I call on all middle-class people, all working people, go to the polls on November 2. You know what to do on November 2. You got to go to the polls, pull that lever for John Kerry.
Hoffa said America needs a president who will fight to keep American jobs and also fight to change the thinking and the ethic among corporations that cheaper labor is better. Hoffa said that undermines the American dream of having decent jobs to support families and a thriving middle class.
According to a recent report by the Department of Homeland Security, the nation's 45,000 federal airport security screeners suffer from low morale, understaffing, and excessive overtime. The report also found that the performance of federal workers compared to those of private companies when trying to detect hidden weapons was equally poor. According to a source who worked for Advanced Interactive Systems, the company hired to train Transportation Security Administration personnel in the days following September 11th, the report reflects the government's desire to give the appearance that airports were secure by the end of 2001. The source said that right up until December 30th of that year, AIS was sending messages to employees that the training was nowhere near complete and Congress would have no choice but to extend it. TSA employees have little outlet for complaint. In August, the Merit Systems Protection Board ruled that they are not protected under the same whistleblower rights afforded to other federal employees. The board said the government can hire, discipline, and terminate screeners without regard to any other law. The agency is currently facing a 22% attrition rate, up from 15% last year.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new book, living wage laws in cities around the country aren't always resulting in actual higher wages for workers who live there. Stephanie Luce's book, Fighting for a Living Wage, says most cities have not done a good job implementing living wage ordinances. In some cases, they have not assigned a single staff person to do so. Some cities, though, have made living wage laws work. According to Acorn, nearly $1 billion in increased wages have been won through the living wage movement.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
In monarchies, the peasants are not even supposed to speak to the royals unless spoken to. In democracies, however, folks are supposed to be free to speak their minds to those in power. That's what Sue Niederer of Hopewell, New Jersey, tried to do. Earlier this year, her 24-year-old son Seth was killed in Iraq while trying to defuse a roadside bomb. Angry is not a strong enough word to describe her emotions. Mad as hell and not going to take it is a phrase that comes closer to Sue's feelings. To express those feelings, she attended a Laura Bush political rally near her home. She wore a politically incorrect T-shirt emblazoned with a picture of Seth and the words, "President Bush killed my son." As Laura pattered on about the heroic nature of her husband's war on terrorism, Miss Niederer hollered out an uninvited but totally legitimate question. If the war is so essential to our national security, why aren't the Bush daughters enlisting in it? Raw ugliness erupted. Bush partisans immediately surrounded this distraught lady, shouting 4 more years over and over while waving their Bush-Cheney signs at her. Hello, she lost her son in Bush's war of lies, and this is the respect she gets from the Bushites? Worse, the police handcuffed her, hauled her to jail, and booked her for trespassing. Of course, the charge was ludicrous and later had to be dropped, but the Bushites are still after her. Now, Bush's Secret Service is investigating Sue, claiming she threatened the president's life. What she did, in an understandable fit of anger, was to say on a website that she'd like to rip the president's head off and shoot him in the groin area. Of course, she didn't mean the comments literally, yet the vindictive Bushites are using them as an excuse to hound and try to destroy her. This is Jim Hightower saying, to tell the monarchy of King George W. to leave Sue Niederer alone, call the White House comment line, 202-456-1111.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me. You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get Score Power from Equifax.com. Score Power gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get Score Power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And the battle continues. Well, sort of a battle. George Bush... what?
I don't remember saying I didn't care about Osama, you know. It's...
Oh, it was strange last night. Welcome, friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border. Streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. Broadcasting on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Andy Borowitz, a interesting take on what happened last night. Here's the Borowitz Report. Democratic presidential nominee John Kerry seized the opportunity of last night's nationally televised debate in Tempe, Arizona, to expose the source of the mystery bulge between President Bush's shoulder blades, tearing off Mr. Bush's jacket while a stunned nation watched in horror. 14 minutes into the televised showdown, Mr. Kerry ambushed the president by departing from the debate rules, refusing to answer a question about outsourcing, and instead directly interrogating Mr. Bush about the mystery bulge. "What's that bulge in the back of your jacket?" Mr. Kerry demanded. "What bulge?" Mr. Bush said. "That bulge, you bastard!" thundered Mr. Kerry, leaping across the stage and tearing off Mr. Bush's jacket. But rather than finding the radio receiver many had theorized was being used to prompt the president during the debates, Mr. Kerry discovered that the bulge was merely an AM radio, which Mr. Bush was using to listen to the Boston Red Sox-New York Yankees playoff game. At a focus group in Ohio, likely voters watching the debate were divided about the revelation that Mr. Bush had been listening to a baseball game during an all-important presidential debate, while Kerry supporters said that the president's decision to listen to the game was typical of his inattention to serious matters. Ralph Clausen, a Bush supporter, disagreed. Clausen said, "If I had a choice between listening to John Kerry for 90 minutes or a baseball game, I'd go for the game." Well, thank you. Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. The photos are up, though. Go to BuzzFlash.com. There's the picture. There's the bulge, that little square transmitter between his shoulder. I actually was certain that I saw it last night. Right in the very first moments there, when he was on stage, there was one moment when they took a shot from the back. It's probably in the first 5 minutes or so. In fact, you can probably see it on C-SPAN. And I swear, you could see the receiver on his back. Yeah, I know. It's starting to sound like flying saucer stuff. But maybe not. I mean, Salon.com has been on this thing. In fact, their article yesterday, they said, "Now a technical expert who designs and makes such devices for the U.S. military and private industry tells Salon that he believes the bulge is indeed a transceiver designed to receive electronic signals and transmit them to a hidden earpiece lodged in Bush's ear canal. There's no question about it, said Alex Darbut, Technical and Business Development Vice President for Resistance Technology in Arden Hills, Minnesota. It's a pretty obvious one. Larger than most because it probably has descrambling capability. Darbut examined photographs of the president's back taken from the Fox News video feed at the first presidential debate in Coral Gables, as well as 2002 photos of the president driving and working in a T-shirt on his Crawford Ranch, which were posted on the White House website. No one at the Bush camp has explained this. Did you have your eyes on Bush's back last night? I thought it was. Is this trivia or not? Who knows? By the way, our website, TomHartmann.com, if you want to drop into the chat room. Last night, we had a full chat room, a whole bunch of folks watching the debate and hanging out in the chat room. Interesting conversations. It was a fascinating debate. Ira, our engineer here, wasn't able to watch it. Maybe we should have a contest. What was Ira doing? Sorry, Ira. Won't do that to you. No, stay away with that baseball bat. Okay. The NPR, National Public Radio, had an online poll. Now, the thing about online polls is that they're not scientific at all in any regard with regard to the population in general, because they're sampling a population of people who are sufficiently affluent and techno-savvy and whatever, you know, to float around the web, number one. Number two, many people will go in and vote over and over and over in polls. Now, a lot of these polls are getting sophisticated. They throw a cookie out when you vote. And so if you try and vote repeatedly, they either just don't take it or they don't register it because the cookie notices that you've already been there. But a lot of them don't, and they allow people to vote multiple times. And so really, and I'm assuming that this one, I mean, if NPR put this thing together, I'm assuming that they set it up so it didn't allow multiple votes. But What these online polls actually do measure, and it is an important thing to be measuring, or an interesting thing to be measuring, is the strength of the base. It doesn't necessarily measure the numbers of the base, but it measures the strength of the base because people are deciding, you know, is this worth going, you know, all this trouble? Anybody who's going to go through all that trouble to go online and vote and all that, they're really motivated. And one of the lessons of history is that the candidate who has most effectively motivated his base very often is the one who wins, because the base is the one that gets out there and does the voter registration drives and does the get out the vote thing and picks up people and drives into the polls and puts the yard signs in their front yard and talks to their neighbors and does the word of mouth advertising and all that stuff that you just can't do with a TV buy. So, I mean, the base is a very, very critical thing. And, of course, all of the polls for the two previous debates showed that Kerry won, all the online polls, which, I mean, I of course, am of the opinion that he won, too. Bush, my take last night, I mean, halfway through the debate last night, I turned to Louise and I said they've changed his meds again. Speaking of Bush, it's like all three debates, Kerry has been the same person. He's been the same guy. You get this sense that here is somebody who is, you know, calm, collected, solid, comfortable in his own skin, knows who he is, knows what he's about, understands the issues all the way down to the minutia, and maintains the big picture. And would probably make, I think, a fairly decent president of the United States. And with Bush, we've seen three different George Bushes now. You know, the first one was the too much Prozac George Bush. He was relatively incoherent. The second one was the too much Ritalin George Bush. He was gritting his teeth constantly and jumping off his chair and all that. And last night we saw a third George Bush. I think they just reduced the dosage on both. You know, Louise, we should get that psychiatrist who wrote the book Bush on the Couch on the air. I'll bet he has some interesting insights into the possibility that the president may be on medication. You know, Jack Kennedy was on drugs throughout his presidency, and serious ones. I mean, he was taking IV narcotics, he was taking amphetamines, he was taking serious drugs, because he was really in bad pain. He broke his back, you know, the PT-109 thing when he was young, and it haunted him his whole life. And then he had Addison's disease, and they had, which is adrenal gland failure. And they had not developed at the time cortisone, which is the treatment for this. And so from the time he was in his early 30s, I think, late 20s, when he was diagnosed with Addison's disease, until about 2 years before he ran for the presidency, must have been about 58, he was expecting to die. I mean, they basically had told him that he'd live to about 35, maybe 40, and then he'd die, because that was the prognosis for people with Addison's disease. And then they developed cortisone, and they were able to forestall his die. They were able to treat him and, you know, it stopped the degeneration of his bones and things. But by that point, he was already in a lot of pain. And the side effect, of course, of the cortisone was the moon face, which is why you see the pictures of him in the 1950, 57, 58, 59, before he started taking cortisone. And he was a very thin guy. His face was very thin, just like Bobby's. And then you look at him in 1959, 60, 61, 62, 63, and he's got a much fuller face. It was actually not his normal face. It was the cortisone. But I digress. So, you know, anyhow, the point is there's a precedent for presidents taking drugs, as it were. So, you know, what did you think about it? Our number, 1-866-889-8894. I was looking at this NPR poll. Anyhow, get back to this thing about the base. The NPR poll, which I think is probably one of the more solid ones of the online polls, the analysis, or the ability to do analysis. Did the debate demonstrate that these people really knew what they were doing? Did they, you know, the analysis? Okay, George Bush, then the four rankings that you could choose: superior, excellent, good, or deficient. And George Bush received an 81% deficient. John Kerry, 69% superior, 17% excellent, 3% good, 9% deficient. So Bush, 81% deficient. Evidence. Did they actually, you know, provide information that caused you to think that they really knew what they were talking about? And here's some evidence for what I'm saying. Bush was down in the good range. Well, deficient. I'm sorry. Deficient. 66% Bush deficient. Superior is only 7%. Kerry, superior 70%. Deficient 9%. Reasoning. Does the debater, you know, does this guy know how to reason? Do they have a functional brain? Reasoning. George Bush, 7% superior, 84% deficient. John Kerry, 71% superior, deficient 9%. Crossfire, were the questions relevant, and did they get to the point? George Bush, 73% deficient. John Kerry, 9% deficient, 47% superior, 35% excellent. Rebuttal, 29% good for Bush, 62% deficient. Did they rebut the other one's arguments? John Kerry, 67% superior. And then the final category was delivery. Did they speak in an organized fashion? You know, it makes sense, easily understood. Bush's deficient rating, 58%, good 13%. Kerry's superior, 74%, excellent 13%. Only 2% good and 8% deficient. So, you know, as I said, this is not necessarily frankly, I think it actually tracks with what happened. But it doesn't need to. It may not necessarily be that. It could just be that this is, how energetic the base is. Yeah, we'll see. 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a couple calls. Mike in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Mike, what did you think about what happened last night?
Well, you know, I just watched part of it on tape. I really lean conservative, and really what bothers me is I would agree with you, John Kerry, far more articulate, far quicker on his feet as far as thinking. But when you raise the prospect out of the blue, is the president on drugs? It just makes me wonder how desperate the campaign can get when they will come up with stuff like that.
Well, I'm not the campaign. I'm not even a Democrat. But, you know, didn't you notice that George Bush has had three different personalities in three different debates?
You know what? He's always been that way.
Oh, you think so?
I have never
so he's consistent in his inconsistency.
Well, they're both inconsistent, but I've never been impressed with George Bush as a debater.
Yeah, well, okay. Good point, Mike. Mike, I'll give you that point. I got to go. We got to take a break here, but I'll give you that point. I'll give you that. 20 minutes after the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, exposing the con in conservative.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a direct TV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Big wheels of all turning, carry me home, so I can.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Folks in the chat room asking, one of Kerry's signature achievements in the Senate was busting open BCCI, the Bank of Commerce and Credit International, Credit and Commerce International, the international, basically, money laundering terrorist front group that the Bush family was heavily involved in, and as was the Bin Laden family and the Saudi royal family and blah, 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 blah. And Kerry blew that thing open and took down a lot of folks. And why isn't he talking about that? Why isn't he bragging about it? Well, the reason why is, I think, is because because that investigation took down a lot of Democrats as well as a lot of Republicans. I mean, Clark Clifford, as I recall, there were a number of Democrats who were harmed, who were exposed in that demonstration, in that those hearings and things, that investigation. And I suspect that's why he doesn't talk about it very much. But, you know, could be something else. Who knows? Rick in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Well, I wanted to comment on this hissy fit that the right-wing media and even some of the mainstream are getting into because of Kerry's mention of Cheney's daughter.
I think it was the L word. He said lesbian.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Number one, I thought just about everybody knew that already, so that's no big secret. Secondly, a certain right-wing talk show host that says, well, why would liberals bring that up? Because I thought they thought, you know, he's saying all liberals think homosexuality is okay. Well, I'm a liberal, and I don't think it's okay. But, you know, what a person does in their personal life, especially if they aren't on the ticket, is irrelevant. I think the point Kerry was making, what he was trying to make was, is that the Bush administration is actually pandering to the religious right by being so blatantly against homosexuality. But here there's a relative of one of the people on the ticket that actually is a lesbian or a homosexual, however you want to describe it. And, you know, the person is a human being, and you would think that the Cheneys are, you know, do love their daughter like anybody else. Now, if the point was, by Kerry, to let some of the religious right know this, if they didn't know it, I see nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, in fact, you know, this got put on the table initially, I think, you know, by Dick Cheney. I mean, in that town meeting, somebody asked him. He mentioned it. He was the first person to actually out his own daughter in a town meeting when he was questioned. This was about 3 weeks ago.
His daughter also
is working on his campaign.
Sure, but I think the problem with all this is it's very easy for politicians in the abstract to say they're for or against something. But do you recall back, I think it was in either 92 or 88, when Bush and Quayle, Bush the elder and Quayle, were actually asked about this abortion situation, and it seemed as if they were saying, well, if my daughter actually was in a situation like that, and it didn't actually come out and say it, but the implication was, well, if they opted for an abortion, I would, you know, counsel them, I would still love them, and blah, blah, blah. And this is the problem with all this stuff, you know. It's very easy to say you're for or against something until it actually hits home.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, Mike. It's I'm sorry, Rick. Yeah,
there's two of us from you have a big fan base here in GR, I guess.
Yeah, I know it's apparent. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Rick. And you know, in fact, we could just leave it at that. I think that this was I believe that this was Kerry's way of saying to the right, hey, these guys are hypocrites, and you ought to know about it. But I cringed a little bit. In fact, I said to Louise when he said it, I said, that's what they're going to be beating him up about tomorrow. And probably best that they only beat him up about that. Who knows? Diane in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Diane.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. We've only got about a minute here. What's up?
Oh, I wanted to comment on your chemical theory of Bush. I think you're absolutely right on. I went to the big theater, big neighborhood theater, where the local Dems had standing room only, hundreds of people watching the debate.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see, you know, Bush split screen with Kerry, Bush's mouth on one side is completely turned down and one side's turned up. And my mom had a stroke where she couldn't smile on one half of her mouth. And it really struck me that there's some chemical or nervous thing going on with that guy.
But that's more of an indication of brain damage than it is of medication use. But that's interesting. I hadn't noticed that. I'll have to look for that.
Yeah,
Diane,
we'll
thanks. Thanks for that insight. I appreciate it. 29 minutes past the hour, and great to hear from you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Stick around.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters President James P. Hoffa stopped in Milwaukee to blast the Bush administration record on jobs loss and urge working and middle-class people to vote for John Kerry on November 2nd. Hoffa said politics is the key to protecting jobs.
This all starts with politics. I mean, we've got to go out and have an administration that believes in having a strong middle class, that believes we have to have a good middle class, that pays taxes, that supports the system, that consumes. That's the whole idea. The money comes in, people have good homes, good lives, America thrives.
As he spoke to reporters outside the former Kelly Docks manufacturing operation in Milwaukee that shut down despite being profitable in order to ship the jobs to Mexico for the cheap labor costs, Hoffa said it's vital that working people not sit out this election.
We cannot send good American jobs overseas, and this administration wants to send every job we have overseas. We've got to turn that around. Politics is the answer. I call on all middle-class people, all working people, go to the polls on November 2. You know what to do on November 2. You got to go to the polls, pull that lever for John Kerry.
Hoffa said America needs a president who will fight to keep American jobs and also fight to change the thinking and the ethic among corporations that cheaper labor is better. Hoffa said that undermines the American dream of having decent jobs to support families and a thriving middle class.
According to a recent report by the Department of Homeland Security, the nation's 45,000 federal airport security screeners suffer from low morale, understaffing, and excessive overtime. The report also found that the performance of federal workers compared to those of private companies when trying to detect hidden weapons was equally poor. According to a source who worked for Advanced Interactive Systems, the company hired to train Transportation Security Administration personnel in the days following September 11th, the report reflects the government's desire to give the appearance that airports were secure by the end of 2001. The source said that right up until December 30th of that year, AIS was sending messages to employees that the training was nowhere near complete and Congress would have no choice but to extend it. TSA employees have little outlet for complaints. In August, the Merit Systems Protection Board ruled that they are not protected under the same whistleblower rights afforded to other federal employees. The board said the government can hire, discipline, and terminate screeners without regard to any other law. The agency is currently facing a 22% attrition rate, up from 15% last year.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new book, living wage laws in cities around the country aren't always resulting in actual higher wages for workers who live there. Stephanie Luce's book, Fighting for a Living Wage, says most cities have not done a good job implementing living wage ordinances. In some cases, they have not assigned a single staff person to do so. Some cities, though, have made living wage laws work. According to Acorn, nearly $1 billion in increased wages have been won through the living wage movement.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. The Bush bald-faced lie train rolls on. Here we have George W. talking about the Congressional Black Caucus. Oh, no, this is Osama. This really caught my attention.
I don't think I ever said I'm not worried about Osama bin Laden. It's kind of one of those exaggerations.
Music provided by the Democratic National Committee. This is going to be in an ad.
You know, again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
That from just a few months ago. Another one here from, this is what, October, so January, 10 months ago. 9 or 10 months ago. The Congressional Black Caucus issued, the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, Elijah Cummings, issued the following news release. Quote, President Bush has repeatedly refused to meet with the 39 members of the Congressional Black Caucus and other African-American civil rights and political leaders, the modern-day stewards of Dr. King's legacy. End quote. John Kerry echoed that last night. And Bush said, well, first of all, it's just not true that I haven't met with the Congressional Black Caucus. I met with the Congressional Black Caucus at the White House. Nobody can find any evidence of it. It'll be interesting to see today if, I'm sure, members of the Congressional Black Caucus will be asked up about this. Scott in New Mexico on the line, 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Hey, Scott, your thoughts?
Well, you're reading my thoughts from another time zone there, Tom. It's incredible. I think you're reading my thoughts through my cell phone here. Because I was going to talk about
the Congressional
Black Caucus. The thing about that is the only meeting that I know of that ever occurred was during one of the many crises in Haiti. The Congressional Black Caucus, they all got on a bus and they showed up at the White House in his office, almost like a sit-in, and forced him to sit down with them to discuss Haiti. That's it.
Ah, so that is the meeting. Oh, that's interesting. Well, thank you for illuminating us, Scott. That's a good one. Remarkable.
Well, I did want to say a couple of other things about that debate. What really has been impressing me, actually, about John Kerry has been when he's talked about the complexity of his spiritual beliefs, that, yes, he holds the belief that life is sacred, he's anti-abortion, but as a legislator, not a theocrat, he cannot put his religious beliefs, he can't legislate that on his fellow citizens.
Yeah, I think it's great. He's doing the same thing that Jefferson and Madison did, basically. And that the founders said, this is the way it's got. Madison was the first president to actually veto a piece of legislation. It was the first legislation. It was in 1812, the first piece of legislation that was presented that would grant to churches government money. And it was so the churches could take care of poor people. And Madison vetoed it. He said it would set a bad precedent. So, wrong. We're not going to allow it. 1-866-889-8894. Marion in Nevada on the line. Hey, Marion.
Hey, Tom. Nice talking to you.
Thank
I
you
wanted
for
to make a quick comment about Bush's expressions.
Sure.
That there was a study done about microexpressions and what happens. And when a person smiles with one corner of their mouth up and one corner of their mouth down, it's an expression of condescension. And the other
thing
I wanted
to comment. I'm not sure I'm capable of doing that. Have you ever tried doing it, Marion? I'm sitting here right now trying to do it.
No, I can't do that.
It's a challenge.
But they did it in a study of relationships, and that every relationship where one partner had that expression virtually was doomed to fail.
Oh, interesting.
And people are capable on a subconscious level of understanding that. The other thing I wanted to point out about both him and Cheney, their expressions, they do this thing that they lie to you and then they sort of snicker smile at you.
Yeah.
Like they lie and they smile like you're supposed to believe it because they've lied.
Yeah.
And I just feel like they have no respect for the intelligence and integrity of the American people.
Yeah.
What really scares me is there are so many people that just seem to buy it hook, line, and sinker.
It's startling, Marion. It's really startling. Thanks for the call from Nevada. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Patrick in Arcata, California on the line. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, how you doing?
What's your take on last night?
Well, first of all, I went to AOL afterwards, and I found that it was extremely skewed in the Bush direction.
Uh-huh. Interesting. I've always had the sense that a lot of AOL users were very conservative. AOL is a very conservative organization. I used to work with AOL. Well, in fact, I still do. For years, I ran forums on CompuServe and the Desktop Publishing Forum, the International Trade Forum, Attention Deficit Disorder Forum. And, I don't get any money from them anymore, but years ago I did. And you get inside that company. And it's a very conservative outfit. And now it's Time Warner, CNN, the whole shooting match. But
Then one other thing, the second to last question, Bush started talking about the corruption in the White House and kind of money being thrown away or around in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And then he added at the end of it, and I will continue with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. Interesting.
So,
I'll let them look for
heads
that
up.
One. Yeah, a good one, Patrick. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. I'll have to track that down. 1-866-889-8894. Robert in San Luis Obispo, California. Am I pronouncing that right, Robert?
You certainly are. You certainly
great.
Are. Tom, I'm a psychotherapist there in that area, and I just wanted to comment on the stark difference in the expressed behavior of the first George Bush we saw in the first debate and the last one.
Yeah.
I've spent 35 years in a career of assisting people to make that transition. And
transition from what to what?
Well, the first George Bush was somebody that was very unsure of himself, very agitated, his inability to recall or formulate things that made sense. Last night I felt that he was fairly coherent. He was able to recall. He looked much more relaxed. What I'm trying to say is that it takes months, sometimes years, to make that kind of a change in an individual, short of what you suggested,
intervention
or
with medication,
possible suggestion of like drugs.
Yeah, yeah, and frankly, you know, I setting aside all partisanship and everything else, here's my best guess of what happened with the first debates. The benzodiazepine-based drugs, the ones that are in the Valium family,
yep.
You know, the,
uh-huh.
are very, most of your modern sleeping drugs now are, you know, Halcyon and I forget the names of all of them, but there's a whole bunch of them. There's like 15 or 20 of them that are all
right.
basically sleeping pills that are like just amped up Valium. And this is what George Bush Sr. was taking when he was in Japan for jet lag. He was taking Halcyon. And that, it was that night before that he threw up in the lap of the Japanese prime minister. Remember,
right.
16 years ago or whenever it was. And he had been taking Halcyon. And one of the side effects of the benzo drugs, particularly if you take them more than 4 or 5 nights in a row, is that because they suppress REM sleep, they suppress dreaming sleep. Dreaming appears to be the time when we integrate what we learn during the day into long-term memory. And so people tend to not have functional long-term memory, and even their short-term memory starts getting more and more diminished over time when you keep taking these drugs to get to sleep every night. And I'm guessing that the real thing here, and this is, I think, the most charitable drug explanation, is that Bush was so filled with anxiety about the thing that for 3 or 4 nights beforehand he had to take a sleeping pill to get to sleep, and that's what happens if you take these benzo sleeping pills too many times in a row.
I agree. I just have one additional question. How have you acquired that knowledge? That's something that most laymen do not know.
Well, I'm also a psychotherapist.
I
ran a community for abused kids for 5 years. I've written 7 books on attention deficit disorder. I'm familiar with psychopharmacology.
Good. I mean, that answers the question. You're very knowledgeable on it, and you're probably exactly right.
Yeah, I think that that's probably more likely than that on a day-to-day basis he's on, you know, like an SSRI drug like Prozac or Wellbutrin or something. But, you know, I wouldn't rule it out. Yeah, thanks for the call, Robert. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom.
Your thoughts on last night?
What?
Go ahead. Your thoughts on last night, Tony.
Oh, my thoughts last night is carried it awesome, especially when he called him on certain things about the fiscal issue.
Yeah.
And when he compared him to Tony Soprano talking about Law and Order and talked about the surplus, I thought
that was a great clip. I mean, that's the sound clip that mainstream radio is going to be playing and TV. You know, that's the sound. You see, both of these guys, when they went into this thing, had to go in with, you know, they're 6 shooters. They basically had to have 4, 5, or 6 sound bites, pre-digested, pre-tested sound bites that they were going to throw out whenever there was an opportunity. And those would be the pieces that they knew that the network news would grab because they were sound bites size and high, you know, high potency quality. Bush's, of course, was his riff about, you know, you being the most liberal, you know, blah de blah, and Kerry had a couple of good ones. That was one of them. So
yeah, they're kind of easy to spot like that. Which ones they played ad nauseum.
Yeah,
I thought Kerry hit it out of the park. He looked like he had it all going on last night. And
yeah.
Once again, he's there in the debates, and Bush is somewhere off in La La Land being told what to say.
Well, could be. Could be, Tony. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's just hear a little bit of this. Let's start this over here again. Joe George
talks about PAYGO. I tell you what PAYGO means when you're a senator from Massachusetts. When you're a colleague of Ted Kennedy, PAYGO...
See, this is a senator from Massachusetts, colleague of Ted Kennedy. How many times did he say that last night?
It means you pay, and he goes ahead and spends.
Well, George, that's how it's supposed to work. We are supposed to pay our own bills. Now, I understand that you don't understand that you think our children should pay our bills, perhaps because other people have always paid your bills. You figure, hey, you know, this, we don't have to pay our own bills. We'll foist it off on somebody else. But that, you know, pay go or pay as you go actually is how it's supposed to work. I mean, gee, what a surprise. So,
lectured by the
Mr.
president
Kerry.
On fiscal responsibility is a little bit like Tony Soprano talking to me about law and order in this country. This president has taken a $5.6 trillion surplus and turned it into deficits as far as the eye can see. Healthcare costs for the average American have gone up 64%. Tuitions have gone up 35%. Gasoline prices up 30%. Medicare premiums went up 17% a few days ago. Prescription drugs are up 12% a year. But guess what, America? The wages of Americans have gone down.
This is an old debating tactic of you just toss out so much stuff that your opponent can't deal with it all. I mean, it's just you just overwhelm them, or for that matter, overwhelm the audience. But you know, in real debating, you're really going up against your opponent and not the audience.
The minimum wage is the lowest minimum wage value it has been in our nation in 50 years.
This was one of the high points of the evening.
If we raise the minimum wage, which I will do over several years to $7 an hour, 9.2 million women who are trying to raise their families.
The pandering to women moment.
Would earn another $3,800 a year.
Not the pandering is bad necessarily.
The president.
Actually, both of these guys were doing a lot of pandering.
The president has denied 9.2 million women $3,800 a year, but he doesn't hesitate to fight for $136,000 to a millionaire.
So Kerry had to have. He had to say women a bunch of times, and Bush had to say liberal a bunch of times, and yeah, on it went. You know, Jesse Jackson had some thoughts on what happened last night. He shared them with the folks at Talk Radio News.
He won all three of us the trifecta because he had a command of foreign policy that was far greater than the president's, the sitting president, and his view of how to make the economy work by reinvestment is a sound policy. And then he reached out to the black community and women and the Hispanics with affirmative action. He reached out to organized labor. So his Kerry's tent is bigger and it includes more people.
Yeah, well said. And I think it's true. I think it's true. And although, well, and in fact, it seems that what Bush is doing is rather than reaching out, he's trying to narrow. He's narrow casting. He's trying to focus in tightly on his base and give them the code words that, you know, he's not going to appoint somebody to the Supreme Court who will uphold Roe v. Wade. In fact, he's going to appoint somebody who will overturn Roe v. Wade for the abortion folks, and you know, something for the gun folks, and something for the abortion folks, and something for the God folks, and something for the gays folks. I mean, the three G's and the A, I guess you could call it. And that's, or you know, if you reverse the order, it becomes GAH! Anyway, that's what Bush had to do, and of course Kerry had to speak to a larger audience there, and he accomplished that. George Bush making promises last night, a little strange. He says at the end of the at the wrap up, he says he wants to make health care more affordable. Now, in 2000, as the Center for American Progress points out, President Bush campaigned on the promise that he would insure more Americans by, quote, making health insurance affordable for hardworking, low-income families, end quote. Has he done it? No. Over 50% increase in health insurance costs just in the last 3.5 years. Last night, he says, oh, this is because of defensive medicine and lawsuits and information technology. Come on. The president's record, you just lay this out. Premiums have risen by an average of 12.5% a year I mean, this is absolutely incredible. And the total, all malpractice reform combined. I mean, if malpractice was the issue and there was, and nobody could sue a malpractice, you know, no more malpractice lawsuits, it would decrease total health care costs by 0.4 to 0.5%, a half of 1%. And yet we're seeing 12.5% increases every year in health care. Why? Because, you know, Bush is leveling the playing field, as it were, for the pharmaceutical companies, for the private hospitals like Bill Frist and his buddies, and for the insurance companies, all big supporters of his. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you.
Bonjour, my name is Veronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
The recent handover of power back to the Iraqis has got investors worried. They ask, what about our war profiteering? Will we still be able to privatize everything in sight? Darlings, everything is under control because everything is still under our control. Alawi has been a wonderful CIA asset for years. Ambassador John Negroponte cut his teeth working with death squads out of Honduras in the 80s, and 140,000 American troops are protecting our oil as we pump it out from under their soil. We won't let this business bonanza be ruined by the evils of accountability or democracy. So relax. We know what we're doing. I'm Zena Folk for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. You'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Acts through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition. Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. No end in sight to work stoppage for thousands of San Francisco hotel workers. This week, hotel managers announced they'll keep employees locked out indefinitely. Over 1,400 workers at 4 downtown San Francisco hotels went on strike last week, vowing not to return to work for 2 weeks or until they receive a fair labor contract. In response, the San Francisco Hotel Multi-Employer Group locked out 2,600 non-striking workers at 10 other hotels.
Well, they're playing hardball because they're global corporations and they're used to getting their way, and they aren't used to having to sit down as equals across the bargaining table from people.
Mike Casey, president of Unite Here Local 2, said workers are attempting to protect their health and pension benefits, reduce workloads, and gain wage increases, despite fierce resistance from management.
We are not going to stand and bow to their hardball, heavy-handed tactics. We're not going to be intimidated by their approach here, and if they want to come back and bargain respectfully with us, then hopefully we'll get a deal down. But if they want to go at it with us and start this fight, then we'll show them, you know, what we're made of.
In a press call, John Wilhelm, president of the Unite Here Hospitality Division, said they're seeking a two-year deal to line up contract negotiations with the bulk of other major union hotel cities, including New York, Chicago, Toronto, Honolulu, and Boston.
If we're going to have effective bargaining in each of the hotel markets, we've got to figure out how to have a national dialogue on the issues that are the most important.
10,000 Unite Here casino employees in Atlantic City are also on strike, and Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. may soon join them if current negotiations fail. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. David in Mount Sinai, New York, on the line. Hey, David.
Hi, Tom.
Your thoughts?
I thought Kerry did very well. But I was very disappointed that there was not one question about the environment. I really thought that that would be a subject where Kerry would do very well. I mean, Bush's record is, you know, I don't think I need to, you know, say how horrible it's been for the environment.
Yeah.
And even from a business perspective and in terms of jobs, I think if Kerry would have spoke about how we could create new American jobs developing alternative technologies to oil,
that would have been really important. In fact, this morning I gave a speech on that topic to a conference here in Vermont, in Burlington, Vermont. And you're absolutely right, and it's an important one. They should have done it. David, thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Steve in Santa Fe. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to talk about something that you were mentioning before the break about the healthcare and the debate.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk to my friends about, you know, the election, I kind of say things like 4 more years of Bush equals 4 more years of, you know, this, that, or the other goof, and you can pick any
right.
any incompetent doofus in this administration you want.
Yep.
But this is the second year in a row we've had to rely on faith-based flu vaccine.
Yeah.
And
I'm not sure that you can pin that tail on the Bush donkey. I think that reflects a... Well, you could say that he has failed to address the problem, the larger problem. Yeah, okay. I'll give you that.
You know, I'm looking at Tommy Thompson. At first I didn't, you know, what's a Tommy Thompson? You know, what does that matter? Then I heard him lying about why the leukemia rates in children in Iraq has gone up so much since 91.
Yeah.
And he said it was because Saddam Hussein stored his weapons all over the place. And you know,
it's got nothing to do with depleted uranium. Nothing to do whatsoever. Don't you worry. And don't pull that curtain aside and look behind that curtain at that man. No, yeah.
So that was basically what I want to mention. And, you know, not to mention the strong-arm tactics he used to get the Medicare debacle thrown through, you know.
Yeah, and lying about it to the American people. I mean, it was just absolutely over the top, the whole thing. And the whole Medicare bill was just a huge giveaway to the pharmaceutical company. Hundreds of billions of dollars. It just goes on and on and on. It's absolutely remarkable. Tax cuts for the top 1%, writes one of our correspondents. The top 1% controls 90% of America's money. Tax cuts they've enjoyed over the years have taken 90% of Americans' wealth out of play to help fund America's total needs. The entire nation, lock, stock, and barrel, all programs including corporate welfare, politicians' wages, roads, bridges, hospitals, colleges, schools, military, Social Security, all funded with only 10% of America's wealth, held by 90% of America's people. Good point. Good point. Tom Hartman here with you, defending America from conservative weapons of mass destruction.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters President James B. Hoffa stopped in Milwaukee to blast the Bush administration record on jobs loss and urge working and middle-class people to vote for John Kerry on November 2nd. Hoffa said politics is the key to protecting jobs.
This all starts with politics. I mean, we've got to go out and have an administration that believes in having a strong middle class, that believes we have to have a good middle class, that pays taxes, that supports the system, that consumes. That's the whole idea. The money comes in, people have good homes, good lives, America thrives.
As he spoke to reporters outside the former Kelly Dox manufacturing operation in Milwaukee that shut down despite being profitable in order to ship the jobs to Mexico for the cheap labor costs, Hoffa said it's vital that working people not sit out this election.
We cannot send good American jobs overseas, and this administration wants to send every job we have overseas. We've got to turn that around. Politics is the answer. I call on all middle-class people, all working people, go to the polls on November 2. You know what to do on November 2. You got to go to the polls, pull that lever for John Kerry.
Hoffa said America needs a president who will fight to keep American jobs and also fight to change the thinking and the ethic among corporations that cheaper labor is better. Hoffa said that undermines the American dream of having decent jobs to support families and a thriving middle class.
According to a recent report by the Department of Homeland Security, the nation's 45,000 federal airport security screeners suffer from low morale, understaffing, and excessive overtime. The report also found that the performance of federal workers compared to those of private companies when trying to detect hidden weapons was equally poor. According to a source who worked for Advanced Interactive Systems, the company hired to train Transportation Security Administration personnel in the days following September 11th, the report reflects the government's desire to give the appearance that airports were secure by the end of 2001. The source said that right up until December 30th of that year, AIS was sending messages to employees that the training was nowhere near complete and Congress would have no choice but to extend it. TSA employees have little outlet for complaint. In August, the Merit Systems Protection Board ruled that they are not protected under the same whistleblower rights afforded to other federal employees. The board said the government can hire, discipline, and terminate screeners without regard to any other law. The agency is currently facing a 22% attrition rate, up from 15% last year.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new book, living wage laws in cities around the country aren't always resulting in actual higher wages for workers who live there. Stephanie Luce's book, Fighting for a Living Wage, says most cities have not done a good job implementing living wage ordinances. In some cases, they have not assigned a single staff person to do so. Some cities, though, have made living wage laws work. According to Acorn, nearly $1 billion in increased wages have been won through the living wage movement.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
In foreign policy, it's hard to claim the moral high road when you're stumbling down the low road arm in arm with repressive dictators. Yet there's our boy George W. insisting to the United Nations in a recent speech that his Iraqi adventure is all about his deep commitment to spreading democracy throughout the world. while he hugs up to Pervez Musharraf, the anti-democratic general who seized power in Pakistan 5 years ago in a military coup. Bush calls Musharraf a trusted buddy in his global war on terrorism, apparently oblivious to the fact that the general himself is considered a terror by Pakistan's democracy advocates. The very next day after his pious democracy speech to the UN, George met with Musharraf for an hour in the White House. Yet our prez ducked mentioning an unpleasant matter of major political importance in Pakistan. Not only has Musharraf declared himself president, but he also continues as chief of the army, thus reinforcing his autocratic military grip on the country. Earlier this year, Musharraf pledged to give up his military position, but he recently reneged, infuriating those fighting for some semblance of democracy in Pakistan. Imagine their anger that Bush, a guy claiming to be a tiger fighting for democracy, meets for an hour with this dictator without even a meow of a protest about Musharraf's continuing military rule. To explain Bush's wussiness, an aide was reduced to semantical contortions, asserting that George had told the general that it's, quote, important to stay on the road of democratic reform, claiming that the general knew what George meant. This is Jim Hightower saying, oh yeah, subtlety always works with military dictators. As a result, Musharraf returned to Pakistan confident that the Bushites had given him a big old wink and would not raise a finger to oppose his ongoing dictatorship. And George wonders why he has no credibility with democracy advocates around the world.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Thursday afternoon, the second hour of our program. It's the time when traditionally we go a little beyond politics and the normal rants and look into the things that you thought you knew that you didn't know, the things that you didn't know what you didn't know about, you didn't know what you needed to know, maybe even everything you knew was wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
And thinks that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could be. Dr. Jerome P. Kasirer. Did I say that right, sir?
Yes, you did.
I did. Eureka. Dr. Kasirer has written a book on the take, How Medicine's Complicity with Big Business Can Endanger Your Health. Dr. Kasirer, I am guessing that the pharmaceutical companies are not going to be offering you any more speaker's fees after you wrote this book.
Well, they haven't in 35 years, so I expect that they won't continue, yeah. Won't be starting it now.
Dr. Kasirer is a distinguished professor at Tufts University School of Medicine and adjunct professor of medicine at the Yale University School of Medicine. This is an interesting look at this. I have a couple of friends who are fairly high up in the psychiatric profession, you know, couple of professors of psychiatry at Harvard University, and it's just amazing to me the stuff that gets tossed at these guys when they go to conferences. This is in large part what you write about in this book, your experience with this, and you know, just laying this out. People go into their doctor's office and they see stuff, right? They, you know, the pen in his pocket that's got the, you know, that has a drug name on it, the pads of paper, the, you know, all this junk. This is really just the tip of the iceberg, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And you mentioned psychiatry. It's a pretty good example of the kinds of things that go on, because for many years, the psychiatrists were not much involved with industry at all. But the advent of new drugs, starting about 10 years ago with Prozac, and subsequently with many, many other new psychiatric drugs, has stimulated the pharmaceutical industry to get psychiatrists heavily involved with industry. And the question you asked about what kind of involvement, it's really quite extensive. The psychiatrists and other doctors as well consult with industry on marketing issues. They get involved with educational ventures with industry. They are on a lecture series for industry. They get paid for these lectures with industry.
Right.
Many other complicated arrangements which I think can have quite serious effects. It can impair their judgment. It can threaten patient care. It can taint medical information. And it erodes trust in the profession, besides increasing the cost of medical care.
We've seen this writ large. Well, in psychiatry, for example, we've seen it writ large. The, you know, methylphenidate, Ritalin, and the SSRI drugs, the family of drugs that inhibit the uptake or the reuptake of serotonin, the Prozac, Wellbutrin, and these other drugs were like penicillin, to that industry, as it were. You know, they're like major. Ritalin wasn't a major breakthrough drug, but it was a major marketing drug. It's a billion-dollar year industry right now.
Right, you are, and as a matter of fact, if you use a pretty good example here of Ritalin and its similar drugs, and what's happened is that the psychiatrists have progressively loosened up the definition of attention deficit disorder and loosened up the definition of anxiety disorder, and the consequence is that more and more people are taking these drugs, and it's not clear that they should be.
Yeah. Now, a bunch of questions arise. Number one, what's wrong with these with psychiatrists or any physician taking money from pharmaceutical companies in exchange for giving a speech at a conference or talking to a parents group or whatever? And well, let's start with that. What's wrong with this?
What's wrong with it is that any time that someone takes money for giving talks or anything of the sort, it does influence them in some way. There's a common human trait of reciprocity, and when people give you something little, you're inclined to reciprocate for it. And the same is true of doctors who lecture for drug companies. It's not something that allows them to be completely objective.
But what if you believe in it? What if you believe that what you're talking about really is good stuff and you really have good information to share with people? It's really useful. And as an added side benefit, somebody's going to give you some bucks. What's wrong with that?
My overwhelming preference is to have doctors who are not paid by industry give those lectures.
Yeah. Okay. I'm there with you. I think it's really
important. I know that.
for people to get this, the extent of the perks that they get. Years ago, 10, 15 years ago, a friend of mine was a urologist out in California, and he came to me with this business idea. He said, you wouldn't believe CMEs, CREs, the continuing medical education, isn't a CME?
Right,
yeah.
CME.
The CME credits that the docs have to get every year to maintain the currency of their license. And he said, we put on the conferences in Hawaii. We put on, they have to apparently be in the United States. Hawaii is a big venue. And he had this whole business plan to make money on the fact that and basically what they were was fancy vacations with small learning opportunities built into them. And the really cool thing about it from his point of view as a business venture was that you could really price these things high because the docs didn't so much care about the price because more often than not there was a pharmaceutical company or a hospital paying the bill. Is that
you're right?
Is it still that way? Has it gotten worse?
It's not as extensive as it used to be. There's been some restrictions on the fancy trips and the fancy locations, but there's still plenty of perks that doctors can get that involve industry. For example, you can go to a lecture in your local community given by somebody flown in from Yale or flown in from Harvard. and get a nice dinner and a lecture which may or may not be tainted.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the trips to Hawaii are not as hot as they used to be, or they're not even
not
there?
As hot as they used to be. But in fact, what happened with your friend is that major companies moved into the business, and now what happens is that the pharmaceutical companies hire these education companies to put on these educational sessions, and then hire the doctors to give the talks.
So it's become a franchise.
It's become a franchise, right?
So, what kind of money are we talking about? If my family doc is doing this kind of stuff, or you know, I mean, compared to the money that he's making in his practice or she in her practice, what kind of money can they make on the road?
Well, it depends on who they are. There's a list of people who are called the key opinion leaders in the community, and those are kind of senior people who everybody kind of looks up to, and those doctors can go around and give lectures at $2,000 to $4,000 a pop. The academics are also involved in it in a major way, and the big ones, the really big ones, are people like so-called Dr. Botox out in California, who is making nearly half a million dollars over a three-year period from a company that makes Botox.
Now, you have some personal experience with this.
Yes, I did.
Tell us about it.
Well, when I was a young doc, I got invited to be on a speaker's lecture series. And I gave a bunch of lectures. They didn't ask me to mention any product. After a period of time, I apparently got so good at it that they wanted me to make videos. They took me to Madison Avenue and taught me how to behave in front of a camera. I did it. And at the very end, they said, okay, now all you have to do is do videos for us. You'll make some money on it. And all you have to do is mention our drug once.
Hmm.
Whoa, I said, I'm not going to do that.
And
after that...
A man with ethics! They can't allow that.
Well, after that, I didn't hear from them.
Yeah.
My talks abruptly stopped. I didn't do any more of that after that at all.
What a surprise that you didn't hear from them. How do we deal with these issues? How do we deal, you know, this really, again, this is tip of the iceberg stuff. When we saw just a couple of days ago this report out that the studies on the anti-cholesterol drugs, the statins, that 8 out of 9 clinicians who conducted the study were actually making more money from the pharmaceutical companies than they were on the study. And it was not disclosed when it was initially published in the journal Circulation, which is where they had published the first study that was used to apparently lower the threshold, the cholesterol thresholds that were recommended, which would, you know, vastly increase the market for the statins. I think I have that information right.
You're very close. As a matter of fact, I wrote the article in the Washington Post that complained about particular disclosure.
Yes.
Yeah, and you were right. That actually it was 7 out of 9 had arrangements not just with one company that made statins, but 3 to 5 of the companies. And my argument was that they didn't disclose those relationships, but once they did, so what do you? How would you interpret it?
Right.
What would you take from that? What would you learn just because they disclosed it? The fact is that people should have written those guidelines on statins who didn't have financial conflicts.
Right. In other words, disclosure is not the answer. This kind of libertarian free market solution, history shows us, doesn't work. People
not in my book, right.
Yeah. And okay. We're talking with Dr. Jerome P. Kasirer, M.D. He's the author of On the Take, How Medicine's Complicity with Big Business Can Endanger Your Health. So what's the bottom line? Should we have laws that say... Or is this an industry thing? Does industry need to police itself better? I mean, where's the pressure point? How do we make change on this issue?
Well, for one thing, I think industry is being foolish by getting physicians so heavily involved with their own products. It's going to make physicians less trusted, and therefore the business of industry is not going to be particularly protected by it either. So I think industry is making a big mistake.
Yeah.
What to do about it in terms of laws, I really don't think that government intervention is necessary, except for certain kinds of organizations, some that I have called in last week's Washington Post so-called front organizations,
mm-hmm.
the National Anemia Action Council, the National Initiative for Sepsis Education, the Council for Hormone Education.
And they're
all
actually
these organizations sound official.
Yeah, and they're front groups
really
for
not.
Specific drugs, for very specific pharmaceuticals and
exactly.
very specific manufacturers.
Exactly.
And you think that that should be banned?
Oh, I think that government needs to step in and deal with these things because they sound official and they're not.
How do you decide, though, when somebody is being straight and when they're not?
Well, that's complicated, and that's the problem.
Yeah. And we've only got 30 seconds left, by the way. I'm sorry.
And what I've called for are experts who are not experts in the drug, but experts in the analysis of clinical data. That's the way it should be done.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Dr. Jerome P. Kasurer, M.D., his book is called On the Take, How Medicine's Complicity with Big Business Can Endanger Your Health. Dr. Kasurer, I assume your book is available pretty much anywhere?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And the website is onthetake.net.
Onthetake.net. Great. Dr. Jerome Kasurer, thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes before the hour, or after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I love my country so much, man. Like an exasperating friend. Dum, 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 dum.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. And Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. A former pharmacist said Monday he refused to fill a college student's prescription for birth control pills or transfer it to another pharmacy where somebody would fill it because he did not want to commit a sin. We have some real problems here in our health care system. He says, I could have trouble sleeping at night. I could be suffering the worst kind of pain, spiritual pain. Then why become a pharmacist? I'm astounded. 1-866-889-8894, Dave in Humboldt County. Hey, Dave, do you think that pharmacists should be able to say, I don't like this, I don't like the morality of you taking this drug, so I'm not going to give it to you, even though your doctor wrote a prescription for it?
No, it's really unethical to try to impose your own values like that. I think every mental health professional has a burden to be more objective than that.
Yeah, I would think so, too.
I had two thoughts. I was hoping to get in before Dr. Caceres had left because I understand now it is so much expected that pharmaceutical companies will contribute to the Republican Party that if they fail to do so, they might be expecting some consequences, and we may have just experienced that. But the other point...
That being, you mean in the Medicare bill?
No, I'm thinking that the flu vaccine may have been found contaminated.
So you think you're seeing a conspiracy theory here in the flu vaccine?
Well, somebody tried to inform me of that, and when I tried to check it out, their little email disappeared.
Yeah, I tried to check that out, too. You sent me a note about that, and I couldn't find anything. I think it was just a screw-up. It was apparently the same bacteria that the U.S. Army was spraying on our cities back in the 1950s and 60s in their biological warfare tests. I am forgetting the name of it, Bacillus thermophilus. No, I don't think that that's it.
It caused the virus to be alive rather than dead, as it was supposed to be. Is that
No. It's just that they're contaminated with this bacteria, and the bacteria is generally not a pathogen. It doesn't bother most people, although it does cause a red. It's like a red kind of bread mold, whereas most bread molds are black, you know. But this is like a red mold, it's actually a bacteria, not a fungi, and it causes this, you know, red infection, and it's ubiquitous. It's all over the place, but some people react to it very strongly, and so they can't, even though it's contaminated with something that's not generally considered to be a real toxic pathogen. It is a pathogen for some people, so they can't just widely distribute it.
A thought from your earlier hour too was that there's a group of people that Bush really does not care to represent. It is the working poor. So when the question of what would you do about the minimum wage went to him, he ducked it completely. He said, well, there actually was one that I would have supported, but let's talk about No Child Left Behind.
Yeah, he not only the working poor, the working middle class as well. And to be fair to George Bush, and I'm guessing you'll probably agree with me on this, he probably has no experience whatsoever with that group of people. I mean, it's really remarkable when you ask people who are of the middle class if they know anybody who is worth more than $50 or $100 million. Almost always the answer is no. And if you know people who are in that category, that level of income, you find that, you know, the vast majority of their friends are also in that level of income. I mean, there's this absolute dividing line, this almost a barrier. It's almost like the old British, you know, caste system society. I mean, they didn't call it a caste system, but, you know, the landed gentry, and the groups don't mix. Very much in American society.
I think from Bush is almost to contempt that these people are there by choice, that they could easily choose to be a part of the.
Yeah, and I don't think that he's ever. I don't think he's ever had much contact with working people, frankly. You know, he grew up in a family of multimillionaires, and he's always had multimillionaires handing him things all his life. I just don't think he gets it.
I wouldn't want to think that many working people would want to have much to do with him either.
Yeah, well, it's a tragedy because, you know, when John Kerry talks about things like, you know, the impact of the minimum wage, the impact of health, you know, conditions and things like this, health insurance and whatnot, he appears to at least know what he's talking about, that he's, you know, he really understands what the impact of this is on people, not necessarily because he's lived it, but certainly because he's seen it. And I just frankly think George W. hasn't. I don't think he's ever seen it. I don't think he's connected with that. And, you know, it's a shame. It's really sad. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Stick around.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters President James P. Hoffa stopped in Milwaukee to blast the Bush administration record on jobs loss and urge working and middle-class people to vote for John Kerry on November 2nd. Hoffa said politics is the key to protecting jobs.
This all starts with politics. I mean, we've got to go out and have an administration that believes in having a strong middle class, that believes we have to have a good middle class, that pays taxes, that supports the system, that consumes. That's the whole idea. The money comes in, people have good homes, good lives, America thrives.
As he spoke to reporters outside the former Kelly Docks manufacturing operation in Milwaukee that shut down despite being profitable in order to ship the jobs to Mexico for the cheap labor costs, Hoffa said it's vital that working people not sit out this election.
We cannot send good American jobs overseas, and this administration wants to send every job we have overseas. We've got to turn that around. Politics is the answer. I call on all middle-class people, all working people, go to the polls on November 2. You know what to do on November 2. You got to go to the polls, pull that lever for John Kerry.
Hoffa said America needs a president who will fight to keep American jobs and also fight to change the thinking and the ethic among corporations that cheaper labor is better. Hoffa said that undermines the American dream of having decent jobs to support families and a thriving middle class.
According to a recent report by the Department of Homeland Security, the nation's 45,000 federal airport security screeners suffer from low morale, understaffing, and excessive overtime. The report also found that the performance of federal workers compared to those of private companies when trying to detect hidden weapons was equally poor. According to a source who worked for Advanced Interactive Systems, the company hired to train Transportation Security Administration personnel in the days following September 11th, the report reflects the government's desire to give the appearance that airports were secure by the end of 2001. The source said that right up until December 30th of that year, AIS was sending messages to employees that the training was nowhere near complete and Congress would have no choice but to extend it. TSA employees have little outlet for complaint. In August, the Merit Systems Protection Board ruled that they are not protected under the same whistleblower rights afforded to other federal employees. The board said the government can hire, discipline, and terminate screeners without regard to any other law. The agency is currently facing a 22% attrition rate, up from 15% last year.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new book, living wage laws in cities around the country aren't always resulting in actual higher wages for workers who live there. Stephanie Luce's book, Fighting for a Living Wage, says most cities have not done a good job implementing living wage ordinances. In some cases, they have not assigned a single staff person to do so. Some cities, though, have made living wage laws work. According to Acorn, nearly $1 billion in increased wages have been won through the living wage movement.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
As I wandered into your town.
just like a stranger.
And welcome back to it, just like a stranger. Some of the strangest bumper music. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. Remember Thomas Scully? Thomas Scully, if the name doesn't ring a bell, you've heard him in the news. You've heard me rave about him on this program. He's the guy who was the head of a hospital association, a trade association that represented hospitals, making big bucks, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, who left that job to take the civil service job of heading up Medicare, or part of Medicare. And then when his assistant, Foster, what was it, Stephen Foster, I think his name was? Anyhow, when Foster, Rick Foster, when his assistant, Stephen Foster was a musician, okay. When his assistant, Rick Foster, came to him and said, you know, this bill is actually going to cost $400 billion and, or $500 billion, and you're showing that it's only going to cost $400 billion. And he said, if you tell anybody that, you're fired. See, the bill actually cost $134 billion more than they said. And where did all that money go? Or where will all that money go? This is over the next 10 years. It will go into the pockets of pharmaceutical companies, big drug companies. And so anyhow, he said to Tom Scully, said to Rick Foster, he said, you tell anybody you're fired. And then, when Congress wanted to investigate this, Foster refused to testify before Congress. And as soon as the Medicare legislation was passed into law, he quit his job with the federal government as a civil servant and went back into the private marketplace working for a lobbying company in the medical, you know, back to the big bucks. I mean, now, that said, this guy is now... He's now on the campaign trail for the Bush campaign. He's hawking Bush's vision for health care. Thomas Scully, yes, you heard it right. He's out there giving speeches on behalf of George Bush's health care program. Believe it or not, Thomas Scully. 25 minutes before the hour, it's time for Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria.
Hi.
Where are you today?
I'm in Washington, D.C.
You always get stuck there, eh?
I like being stuck here.
Ah, well, that's the very best then. I'm flying through Washington, D.C. tonight on the way to California, where I'm speaking at the Bioneers Conference on Saturday, and I'll be doing this program tomorrow live from the headquarters, the worldwide headquarters of the Organic Wine Company. Should be an interesting program after a few glasses of wine. Anyhow, what's going on in Washington?
Pretty much a reaction to the debates last night.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the reactions are?
Well, the sense is that Kerry probably won. Now, some people are saying it's close. A few people are trying to say that Bush did what he needed to do. But by and large, the feeling is that John Kerry put in a very workmanlike and solid performance, made his case. And what we now to watch out for in the next 3 weeks is to see if the candidates can stick with their messages, or if we're going to have to look out for the kind of negative campaigning and negative attacks that we've seen so far, and that both campaigns apparently are saying they expect to get very, very nasty.
Interesting. Ellen Ratner is also on the line with us, the Talk Radio News Service. We're being double-teamed here. This is great, Victoria and Ellen. Hey, Ellen, welcome.
Well, thank you so much.
And you are out west someplace, I'm guessing.
I am out west. I'm actually about ready to get on an airplane to come home. It's pretty. I hate to kind of leave the west, but work calls.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting. I actually landed some tickets and sat inside last night. And I'll tell you, if you're reporting, the last thing you ever want to do is sit inside because you can't see the faces. You know, except at a distance, I was only at 14 rows, but that's still pretty hard.
Yeah.
You can't really see the split screen, and naturally, you focus on the person who's speaking. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to report what the audience saw. When I was sitting with the Kerry people, and actually most of the Kerry people, some were campaign people, some were not, but the little group around me, there were only four or five of us, actually thought it was a draw. Now,
interesting.
According to people I talked to and the press I talked to, who were sitting in the audience, in the press room watching it on television, most of those people thought Kerry won.
Bush was making his faces again.
What?
Bush was making his faces again.
I hear he was even, Victoria was even talking about him foaming. And I was at the gym this morning, and this Bush guy agreed with her.
Yeah, yeah. So you saw him foaming at the mouth, Victoria?
Well, I saw a little bit of spittle at the side of his mouth, yeah. But he also seemed to have, Senator Kerry did this to a lesser extent, but President Bush went in there with this smile, this I don't know, I'm a Stepford wife smile.
Yeah.
And this grin stayed fixed there pretty much throughout the debate, no matter what he was talking about. And it was incongruous.
He was being super, super conscious of the fact that he might be being watched. I mean, one of the really difficult things, and you probably know this, I mean, one of the really difficult things when you're on camera is if you know that you're on camera and you're not speaking. I mean, when you're speaking, it's really easy to get lost in what you're saying and just be yourself. But when you're listening and the camera's on you, and you become conscious of the camera, sometimes it's really hard to not become so self-conscious that all of your expressions start to become voluntary. I mean, you've got to intentionally make yourself smile and things like that.
Yes,
so, it's a tough
you
one.
Do.
It's a tough one. So, Ellen, what else? I assume you were not able to see the box on the back of George's suit coat.
No, but I read about that again. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Well, there's a picture of it on BuzzFlash from last night. And when he first went up last night up on the stage, I saw it. I mean, he turned around and there it was on his back. And I said, there it is. And, you know, you've got some of the best tailors in New York City saying, you know, looking at these photos and looking at the film and saying, yep, that's what it is. This is, you know, suits don't wrinkle that way. So, who knows?
Yeah,
but the issue
was
how would they get him
sounds
that wouldn't show up in his microphone?
These devices are way deep down inside the ear canal. They actually don't have a battery in them. What's called inductively coupled, and so you have to produce a really strong radio frequency field to drive them, because they're actually being driven by the field near them. The same way that if you put metal in a microwave oven, it'll heat up and explode. And so you wear this box on your back, and you have a loop around your neck, which is actually a transmitter that's activating the thing in your ear, which is passive.
That's just wild.
Yeah.
Is it really genuinely possible? This is kind of semi-rhetorical, that he does have a device.
Yeah, I think it is actually. I've been treating this half as a conspiracy theory thing, but I think that it's entirely possible that he's sufficiently average. Average isn't even that's an insult to average people. He's not sufficiently in touch with his memory functions that they feel that they have to be able to feed himself. There was one point during the debate last night. When Kerry was talking and they had the split screen and Bush looked down and he looked like he was listening to something. And then they went to Bush and he came back with probably one of the most two or three articulate sentences of the entire evening. And I turned to Louise and I said, he just got a cue. And there were a couple of points during the speech where it really looked to me like he had gotten a cue. But who knows? I mean, you know, maybe not.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So, all the news, Ellen, on your end? Are we wrapped up?
Well, I mean, that is all the news, although it was very interesting. I talked to several Republicans and some Democrats, and the Republicans are very honestly, the ones that talk to me sort of off the record, are saying it is going to be the nastiest 3 weeks we've probably seen in American history.
Oh, yeah, because Bush has got to do that. He's flailing. He's desperate now.
Really nasty.
Yeah,
and you know,
like,
they
I don't
could,
think we've
they
seen
could
anything
be,
like these 3 weeks. So we're gonna
and
see.
There could be just enough mud that it'll stick, or just enough mud that it'll cause people to doubt, or enough mud that people just won't turn out.
Yeah, well,
and that's all he needs.
I think suppressing the voter turnout is the big thing that they're working for. Okay, Victoria Jones, Ellen Ratner, we're up to date, right?
Yes, we'll
indeed.
Have more for you tomorrow.
Okay, great. We'll talk to you both tomorrow. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye now. 1-866-889-8894. Phil in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Phil.
Yeah, I wanted to say two things. The first thing is that at the end of every debate and they get up to shake hands, that somebody runs over to where George Bush is sitting and they pick up his notes on all three if it's happened.
Oh, interesting.
Well,
and the second thing is about the flu shot deal.
Uh-huh.
First, they said that there was no profit in it for the drug companies to make it here in the United States.
Right.
And now they're saying that they'll get sued if they make it or something.
Yeah, and at the same time, this product that there's no profit in is now, you know, normally $10 a dose and is selling for $100 a dose. I mean, there are market forces are still at play here.
I think neocons are at play there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well said. Thanks, Phil, for the call. It's good to hear from you. Thomas Scully. Oh, my God. Oh, this is incredible. This registration bait and switch. Have you heard about this? You know, yesterday we were talking about this company in that the Republicans have funded that is setting up tables outside government buildings, outside shopping malls, supermarkets, and whatnot, so you can register to vote. And it turns out that if you check the box that you're Democratic, after you've registered, they tear up and throw away your registration form. And you know, fairly well documented in several different news reports from two different states now, and funded entirely by the Republican Party. Okay, so that number one. Here's a new one. This just in from the Oregon Vanguard. This is remarkable. An article by Matt Petrie. The headline, Registration Bait and Switch, and the subhead, Students may have inadvertently registered Republican while signing petition. Just listen to this. This is incredible. Students passing through the park blocks yesterday afternoon were shocked to discover that a group of petitioners may have misled them into changing their party affiliation to Republican on their voter registration. The petitioners, who refused to identify themselves and gave conflicting accounts of who they were working for, asked passersby to sign a petition, quote, to lower auto insurance costs for young people, end quote. When students signed the petition, they were handed voter registration cards and told to fill out only the name and address section in order to verify their signature on the petition. Many students who had signed the petition were surprised or outraged to learn that they may have inadvertently registered to vote as a Republican. Sarah Workman says, I almost want to go back there and get my information back. They said, you don't have to put any info here, indicating the party affiliation section, Workman said, referring to the petitioners. He said, it's okay, it's just for verification. I'm going to call my elections office. Jody Kassinger, a student, says, this is sick. She had initially signed the petition and then became suspicious when she was handed a voter registration card and asked to fill out only two lines. She was like, I look at it and I'm like, dude, this is a voter registration card. Holly Smith, a Portland Community College student and registered Democrat, had a similar reaction. This is not cool, she said. I am going to get it back. Many of the petitioners either refused to comment or insisted that the voter registration cards were just for verification purposes. One petition, however, who would not give his name, confirmed that the group's intention was to file voter registration cards with Republican checked under the party affiliation. I can't be held responsible, he said, this is one of the petitioners, when asked if he thought his registration method might be misleading. I can't be held responsible. That's George Bush's line. You're not supposed to steal. Well, I guess it's the official Republican Party line. I mean, just take it from former Enron lobbyist and now RNC chairman Ed Gillespie. You know, can't be held responsible. Okay. Another petitioner standing between Smith Memorial Student Union and Neuberger Hall said he worked for a company called West Coast Management and said that the ballot and the petition was nonpartisan. The man also said that the petition was a ballot measure, but he didn't know when it would be, on what ballot. Another petitioner later explained that the petition is not a ballot measure, but insisted that a letter will be sent to the Secretary of State. Oh. A petitioner, one of these people, these are the people who are out getting the petitions, right, who are actually signing up students to switch from Democrat to Republican on their voter registration, and they don't realize it. They asked him his name, and he said, Ben Over. Say that fast three times. Anyhow, a petitioner who identified himself as Ben Over said that he was employed by a group called Voters for All that shouted, I hate Democrats, man, as the reporter walked away. No information could be found on either West Coast Management or Voter for All searches in the Internet, telephone directories, or business listings. You know, Victoria and Ellen saying this thing is going to get dirty. It is. It is already there. And this is worse, frankly, than deceptive advertising. I mean, we're going to see a lot of that, too. But the group's actions, apparently, while misleading, are not illegal unless they are telling people that they must register Republican, according to Ann Martin's chief of communications for Secretary of State Bill Bradbury. She says, I know it doesn't pass the smell test. The problem is not breaking any laws. So that's interesting. It's not against the law to do a bait and switch on people and get them to fill out a voter registration card under false pretenses so that you can then check the Republican box and send it in. Very strange. John Wyckoff, executive director of the Oregon Students Association, was out in the park blocks working for OSA's voter registration campaign. He tried to blow the whistle on them. He said what they're trying to do is get people to register Republican because they get paid for the cards. You don't have to sign a voter registration card to sign a petition. This is what Wyckoff says. When Wyckoff stood by the petitioners and attempted to tell people that they didn't have to sign the registration cards, the group called a campus public safety officer that Wyckoff was saying racial epithets at them. Wyckoff, who was then asked by the officer to move to a different part of the block, said it was the petitioners who were calling him names. They were calling me queer, Wyckoff says. When asked about the incident, the petitioner's only comment was, that's just those Democrats over there. This apparently from a student newspaper, The Vanguard, in Oregon. Absolutely remarkable. Absolutely mind-boggling. And what's next? What's next? Fill out this form to remove your voter registration? Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they got police going door-to-door in black communities in Florida, scaring people. You know, it might be a felony if you don't... You're not properly authorized to vote. And this, on it goes. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
to discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. The second presidential debate focuses on domestic policy, and no one is more concerned about the next president's plan for working people than America's labor unions. SEIU launched what it's calling a Heroes Program in 14 battleground states to get out the carry vote. Tracy Surprise, member of the SEIU Heroes program, goes door to door talking to people about the issues.
You can talk about the statistics of health care and the number of people who have no health care, but I get to see the faces.
Surprise worked as a full-time nurse before becoming involved in the program.
This woman that I met the other day, whose daughter is on her third round of chemotherapy for a lymphoma, a type of cancer, and how she and her family members have mortgaged their houses because the daughter ran out of the health care insurance. But it's like, this is the type of story that I guess kind of moves me to keep doing what I'm doing and to reaffirm to me that we need some serious change in this country.
Manuel Veon left his job at the Madison Concourse Hotel 6 months ago to work as an SEIU hero.
The Iraq War is the other common theme. You know, I talked to family members who have lost, you know, their son or daughter due to the war. The past 4 years, you know, under the current administration, things haven't gotten any better. And that's why, you know, when you go out and vote, you should think about not just one issue, but many other issues. And keep your mind open to the different issues that are involved with this upcoming election and to pay close attention to the debates to know the differences between the candidates. And I really care about those issues, and, you know, we're trying to do something about that.
Surprise and Veon are two of the more than 2,000 people that have left their regular jobs to educate and register voters. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Whatever you want, whatever you need, I will be right here waiting.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Some large employers will be allowed to cut health benefits for retirees. I want to get into that a little bit. We'll get into that in the next hour. O'Reilly hit with sex harassment. So that's an entertaining story. I got to tell you, there's some strange stuff going on out there. By the way, peacefuljewelry.com, just a heads up. It's a site that's run by some progressive activists that I know that are just really good people doing good work. And so I thought I'd give them a plug. Peacefuljewelry.com, worth checking out. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Esther in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Esther, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. When I first called, I was going to ask, why would these folks want to get people to change their registration to Republican? And I heard you say something about their paid recruiters. That's one theory. Right. But the other one, I wonder, is related to maybe there's a reason to use these folks when they change or vote fraud in the electronic voting.
Well, yeah.
They can come back and say, oh, no, look at all the new Republicans. Look at all the changes to Republican.
Yeah, it's interesting. You wonder what is the there behind the there. Yeah, it's because in this election, it's not going to affect people. Now, the problem is if these people 2 years from now try to vote in a Democratic primary, they won't be allowed to.
Ah, and, I thought of that.
Yeah,
I thought once they go in the voting booth, I mean, they're going to vote Democratic anyway, so no. There has to be some other...
In a primary election, in most states, you are only given the ballot
exactly,
for the party to which you are registered.
Right.
And so what they're doing is they're saying, okay, yeah, we're going to let you vote, but only in half the elections. You can't vote in the primaries.
Uh-huh.
And okay. So that would be more of a long-term strategy, though, because this
right.
isn't a primary. So
I hadn't thought of that one.
Yeah, unless your Oregon somehow uniquely sends out, you know, knows that Republicans should... Nah, that doesn't make any sense. You wonder if this has more to do with something that has to do with statistics. I mean, what kind of game are they trying to play here? What's really going on? I don't know. And if any of our listeners have ideas about it, I'd love to hear them.
My theory right away was the electronic vote. This is so they could...
But Oregon doesn't...
It would look like it was Republicans voting all along.
Yeah, I may be wrong, but I think Oregon is the only state where everybody votes by mail. I could be wrong. Maybe it's Washington State. It's one of those states in the Northwest.
I have another quick question, if you have a minute.
We have about 15 seconds.
Okay. Why isn't Robert Novak being
Why isn't he in jail?
Instead of these other two reporters.
Yeah, I don't.
Matthew Cooper and Judith Miller. Why are they in trouble and not Novak?
Well, because they work for the New York Times, and Novak is good buddies with all the cons. I don't really know, Esther, and it's a very, very, very good question. And I we'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
You know how
all
this
right.
shakes out. Thanks
all
for the call.
Right,
good to hear
from
you. Okay, talk to you later. You're in the real free speech zone.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Critics say that when we consolidate the media into fewer and fewer hands, it threatens diversity. Nothing could be further from the truth. Every demographic has different consuming habits. With 500 channels, we'll have one shopping network for Elvis memorabilia and another for the dogs playing poker crowd. Something for everyone. In this spirit, we billionaires are buying up the airwaves. If you're on a road trip from Kennebunkport to Crawford, you can tune into Rush the whole trip down. Just think, the same country and soft rock stations everywhere you go. And what we leave off the dial, you're better off without, really. Aren't you glad someone's protecting you from polka music? You're welcome. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here comes! The
pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters President James P. Hoffa stopped in Milwaukee to blast the Bush administration record on jobs loss and urge working and middle-class people to vote for John Kerry on November 2nd. Hoffa said politics is the key to protecting jobs.
This all starts with politics. I mean, we've got to go out and have an administration that believes in having a strong middle class, that believes we have to have a good middle class, that pays taxes, that supports the system, that consumes. That's the whole idea. The money comes in, people have good homes, good lives, America thrives.
As he spoke to reporters outside the former Kelly Docks manufacturing operation in Milwaukee that shut down despite being profitable in order to ship the jobs to Mexico for the cheap labor costs, Hoffa said it's vital that working people not sit out this election.
We cannot send good American jobs overseas, and this administration wants to send every job we have overseas. We've got to turn that around. Politics is the answer. I call on all middle-class people, all working people, go to the polls on November 2. You know what to do on November 2. You got to go to the polls, pull that lever for John Kerry.
Hoffa said America needs a president who will fight to keep American jobs and also fight to change the thinking and the ethic among corporations that cheaper labor is better. Hoffa said that undermines the American dream of having decent jobs to support families and a thriving middle class.
According to a recent report by the Department of Homeland Security, the nation's 45,000 federal airport security screeners suffer from low morale, understaffing, and excessive overtime. The report also found that the performance of federal workers compared to those of private companies when trying to detect hidden weapons was equally poor. According to a source who worked for Advanced Interactive Systems, the company hired to train Transportation Security Administration personnel in the days following September 11th, the report reflects the government's desire to give the appearance that airports were secure by the end of 2001. The source said that right up until December 30th of that year, AIS was sending messages to employees that the training was nowhere near complete and Congress would have no choice but to extend it. TSA employees have little outlet for complaint. In August, the Merit Systems Protection Board ruled that they are not protected under the same whistleblower rights afforded to other federal employees. The board said the government can hire, discipline, and terminate screeners without regard to any other law. The agency is currently facing a 22% attrition rate, up from 15% last year.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new book, living wage laws in cities around the country aren't always resulting in actual higher wages for workers who live there. Stephanie Luce's book, Fighting for a Living Wage, says most cities have not done a good job implementing living wage ordinances. In some cases, they have not assigned a single staff person to do so. Some cities, though, have made living wage laws work. According to Acorn, nearly $1 billion in increased wages have been won through the living wage movement.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Yeah.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
If you're an aspiring performer who wants to be on the screen, Chicago might be your kind of town. In fact, virtually everyone in the Windy City will soon be seen by various police authorities. In a leap into the abyss of the surveillance society, Chicago authorities are installing a web of spy cameras linked to a sophisticated new computer program that not only will view everyone who appears on various streets, but also will alert police agents when anyone is acting suspicious. What is suspicious? Wandering around aimlessly, lingering outside a building, pulling your car over to the shoulder of a highway, leaving a package in a doorway, and other common acts you and I have done 1,000 times. What we're doing is a totally new concept, says the director of this intrusive technology. It's going to take us to a whole new level. I'll say, the Snooper Vision cameras can zoom in on you and follow you from camera to camera, recording your every move, whether or not you're doing anything wrong. Faceless bureaucrats will sit in an undisclosed fortified building, monitoring the screens and dispatching armed police to accost loiterers, aimless wanderers, and other suspicious characters. Not only will the police place these so-called smart cameras around town, but so will housing, transportation, and other city agencies, even street sweepers, making Chicagoans the most watched people in America. Orwell would be so proud. Of course, the authorities insist that this is for our own good, claiming we'll all be safer. Chicago's new surveillance director says the value we'll gain in public safety far outweighs any perception by the community that this is Big Brother who's watching. But wait a minute, it is Big Brother watching. Yet Chicago's mayor dismisses all of us pesky civil libertarians, saying that, after all, we're not inside your home or your business. This is Jim Hightower saying, not yet they're not.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get Score Power from Equifax.com. Score Power gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get Score Power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Walmart, sweatshop labor. Where does it begin? Where does it end? What's going on with this stuff? Let's ask Hugo Bonjean, the former VP of Operations and Development for Marriott International and Corporate Human Rights Advisor. Hugo, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, you are.
Bonjean. Okay, great. This Co-op America group has published a recent report that says that Walmart is continuing to use clothing suppliers that use sweatshops and even child labor in some cases. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I'm actually a member of Co-op America, and Co-op America has a new report, which is a retail scorecard, which they actually rank a whole bunch of U.S. retailers and how they're doing in terms of human rights and labor rights among their supply chain. and Walmart gets an F rating in the Coop America report. Not to say that a lot of other retailers like Target and Sears are doing that much better, but still, it seems that Walmart's record is really the worst of the group.
Yeah, Hugo, how do you respond to the conservatives who say to you, well, at least they're providing a job for some poor person in a poor country?
Well, that is that's an argument that actually comes up a lot.
I know. That's why I said it.
Yeah, it's the question is, how valuable is that job really? If somebody really works 17 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week, and makes like one third of living wages,
mm-hmm.
it really isn't a lot of a job.
And except that they're there voluntarily in most cases. So you know, you could say that you're denying somebody. I mean, looking at the larger issue here, you're denying somebody the opportunity to have a job, even if it's a lousy job.
Well, before Walmart, actually, let's not just talk about Walmart. Before actually any of these sweatshop factories opened, these people did have a way of living.
That's right. That's the key to the argument is that most the quote third world countries, most of these societies were actually homeostatic. They were living in balance. People, most of them were subsistence farmers. And a lot of the subsistence farmers got wiped out by our corn subsidies and other agricultural practices, and they got knocked off the farms, and so they go to the big cities looking for work. Or you have these sweatshops setting up in the big cities and saying, come here, you know, it's the siren song, and you can't keep the kids down on the farm any longer, and they go into the city, and it's not quite what they were expecting, but now they're trapped. They're stuck. It's either live in a horrible slum or work here and live in a semi horrible slum. Is that what you saw when you were in South America?
Absolutely. I was at one point in Chile, and I was in a very poor farming community there when I visited a friend of mine who was doing some missionary work there. And the choice for people there is very very limited. Either they work for the landlord at near to slave wages and produce the food that essentially is shipped to North America, Europe, and the rest of the developed world, or they go to the slums and try to survive there, in which case a lot of times they end up into sweatshops or anything basically they can do to survive on, which can also involve quite a bit of criminality.
Yeah. Now, Hugo Bonjean, you've written a book called In the Eyes of Anahita?
That's correct.
A-N-A-H-I-T-A for our listeners. And I assume this book is available through the normal suspects, your local bookstore, Amazon, things like that?
Yes, it is available on Amazon, and it should also be available through the local bookstores.
Yeah, okay. And what is or who is Anahita?
Anahita is actually a character in the book for the reader to discover. What's actually more important almost than Anahita is the eyes who lead a corporate executive on an adventure through South America, and a set of mysterious eyes actually lead him further on. And at the book is largely autobiographical, and it is based on my travels as an executive who married in South America.
Yeah.
And so as he gets on his journey in South America, he gets confronted with extreme poverty while he's doing multi-million-dollar deals. And he becomes very very strongly aware of his active role in contributing to the problem rather than solving it.
Right. And you had that dark night of the soul yourself.
Absolutely. My experiences in South America, and I've been very lucky that I have two missionary friends. I just told you that one of them is in Chile. The other one was in Brazil. And my friend who was in Brazil actually worked in the slums in Salvador, which is a city at the Atlantic coast. And I visited the slums there. And when you walk and see that poverty and get embraced by some of these people, and you see their misery, and you know you're simply too well-dressed, too well-groomed, too well-educated to be there, what do you tell them? Like, I'm sorry, it's just business. It's nothing personal.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to see those circumstances directly, and everything I've seen on television, on the news here, did certainly not prepare me for seeing it in real life.
Yeah, I had a similar experience.
I became very well aware that I was basically eating their banana, which and drinking their coffee, which they were producing for close to slave labor for me.
Yeah, so what do we do? What do we do about this?
Well, I think there's really different things we have to do. First of all is we need to create more awareness around it, and I'm really pleased that there's people like you that write books about it and run these programs on the radio and other people that run them on television. Because creating awareness among the masses is really very important. I think there's still a large majority of people out there that have no idea what kind of hidden support structure exists behind the products they buy in the stores.
The support structure that you're talking about, Hugo, is this is the support structure of and for the store. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. In other words, the way that I like to say this is that we in the United States are very proud of the fact that we ended slavery. At least we think we did. And my suggestion is that we did not end slavery. We exported it.
The export, absolutely.
Yeah. Our slaves are in the
world. Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we don't have to, you know, Thomas Jefferson had to look his slaves in the face every day, and so presumably he treated them fairly reasonably. At least many slave owners did. Many didn't. You know, many were just, you know, SOB sadists, but whatever. They had to deal with, slavery was right there among them, and they had to deal with it. We don't have that difficulty, that challenge. We don't, you know, and no doubt it was a challenge. We just kind of blithely go along until somebody like Hugo Bonjean comes along and says, "You ought to read In the Eyes of Anahita and check this out." This comes along and says, "Here's the situation. You didn't know this. This is the hidden support structure that makes Walmart possible."
Yes, and what I'm trying to do within the Eyes of Anahita is also, rather than creating the awareness in a pure factual manner, I've really chosen to write In the Eyes of Anahita more as a novel in order to involve readers on an emotional level into it.
Yeah.
Because we do have to get emotionally involved in order to change our behavior and really, if we want to make an impact on changing this world.
I agree. Hugo, thank you for being with us today. Is there a website where people can learn more about this?
Yes. The website is www.intheeyesofanahita.com, and the book is also available directly through the website, and all books that sell through the website, 20% of that sales will go to foster parents, children in South America.
Marvelous. Hugo Bonjean, B-O-N-J-E-A-N, author of In the Eyes of Anahita. Hugo, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Yeah, bye now. This is really such an important issue when you get right down to it. Not only are we creating slave labor conditions around the world, you know, it's like people say, well, you know, it's like we create the factories. They come, they come and work. It's a specious argument. I'm sorry, it just doesn't work. And not only are we creating these conditions around the world, but we are also ripping the guts out of our own workforce in the United States in order to do it. We're saying, you know, well, you here in the United States, you workers in the United States, you employees, forget it. You want $15 an hour, $10 an hour, $5.50 an hour? We have to pay workman's comp on you. We have to pay FICA. Come on. We can get this for 50 cents an hour, a dollar an hour, 10 cents an hour in some parts of the world. So, you know, we'll move, they say. And they're doing it. They're doing it in hordes. And everybody wonders why the American economy is getting progressively more and more anemic. Why it is that the middle class is getting poorer and poorer. George W. Bush clearly doesn't understand it. I mean, he's scratching his head. He's going, well, I gave them back their money. You know, I know you want to have more. You want to have more of your own money, right? You want to, you know, it's what you earn, you get to keep it. I'm sorry, George, it's not about taxes. If you don't have a good job, getting an extra $50, $100 in your tax doesn't make it. It's about the infrastructure that maintains a nation. And on the outside, you know, externally, what we're doing in third world countries, in many cases, is terribly immoral. And what we're doing here at home is we're wiping out the American middle class. And the reason we're doing it is because it inures profits to two groups: multinational corporations and the investor class in the United States. Much fewer than 1% of Americans actually live on their investments. Those people, the Warren Buffetts, well, Warren Buffett actually runs an investment firm as well, but you know what I'm talking about. And the heirs of Sam Walton and, you know, like that, they make so much money on their investments that they can just sit around the pool and wait for the checks to arrive, the dividend checks. And under Bush's last tax cut, they pay a maximum 15% income tax rate, and they pay no FICA. They do not pay into the Social Security Trust Fund. You want to fix Social Security? Just say, okay, you know, the first $87,500 of your dividend income, you have to pay Social Security tax on. That in and of itself instantly would make Social Security solvent forever. But no. So it's inuring to the benefit of the corporations and the investors and screwing the workers. I mean, it's the bottom line. And he's talking class warfare. Yes, and they declared it. It sure enough is class warfare against the middle class and the working class. It's wrong. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. A Ralph Nader alert for you. Ralph Nader, number one, is campaigning in battleground states and is now officially calling himself a spoiler. Yeah, no, seriously. Ralph Nader visited San Francisco today, this story a couple days ago on BuzzFlash, as part of a West Coast campaign swing that include key battleground states, including New Mexico, Oregon, Washington, and Nevada. Greens for Kerry and other progressive organizations are shadowing Nader. Greens for Kerry founder Sarah Newman says it's ironic that the movement Nader himself helped start and wanted to see all his life is currently underway, yet he's undermining it. Now, after promising not to be a spoiler and focusing his campaign on beating Bush, he's selling spoiler T-shirts on his website, attacking Kerry more than Bush. This is from Sophie Mintier, GFK member, attacking Kerry more than Bush and campaigning in key swing states in the final days of the election. Well, at least one of those key swing states has said no thank you. A state court knocked Ralph Nader off Pennsylvania's presidential ballot yesterday, citing legal problems with his nomination papers that left him thousands of signatures short of the number he needed. The Commonwealth Court President Judge James Garner Collins called the petitions rife with forgeries. He said that fewer than 19,000 of the more than 51,000 signatures that Nader supporters submitted were valid. He needed at least 25,697 to be listed on the ballot. And here, this judge was very concerned. He says, the conduct of the candidates through their representatives, not their attorneys, shocks the conscience of the court. In reviewing signatures, it became apparent that in addition to signing names such as Mickey Mouse, Fred Flintstone, John Kerry, and the ubiquitous Ralph Nader, there were thousands of names that were created at random and then randomly assigned either existent or non-existent addresses by the circulators. You know, this is, in a way, this is like karmic justice. I mean, this is, because, see, here's what happened. I wasn't there. I can't say for sure that this is what happened, but I'd be willing to bet an awful lot that this is what happened. The Republicans go into Pennsylvania and they say, okay, we've got to get Ralph Nader on the ballot because that 1 or 2% or 3% that he can get of the vote, that's enough to swing the vote our way. And they may well be right. And so they say, well, how do Republicans do things? You know, how are we going to get him on the ballot? How do Republicans do things? With money! So they go out in the marketplace. And they say, what we're going to do is we're going to hire some people to get signatures for Nader. And so they hire people and say, you know, we'll pay you $4 an hour plus 5 cents a name or 20 cents a name. Or maybe there's no hourly thing. It's just, you know, like Daryl Issa when he did the Republican in California, when he did the recall petition against Gray Davis, it was $1 a name. He spent $1 million of his own money. That's why he was in tears when Schwarzenegger took the nomination, because Daryl Issa thought he was getting himself. He thought he was greasing the skids to get himself into the governor's mansion. In any case, so they say to these people that they're hiring, we'll pay you $1 a petition, $1 a signature for every signature you get here for Ralph Nader. And so the people, they just start making them up. You know, Fred Flintstone, Ralph Nader, Mickey Mouse, John Kerry, and they start making up addresses. And they turn the things in, and the Republicans go, huh, babe, pretty good, 150 addresses, here's $150, and the people walk away whistling. The free market system that the Republicans so love to embrace just bit them in the butt. It just got them. There's no doubt in my mind that these phony signatures were not gathered by true Nader believers. Couldn't have been. They would have paid attention. They would have made sure it was right. Probably the 19,000 were good. They were actually gathered by Nader folks. And the remaining signatures of the 51,000 submitted that were phonies were the result of cons or Republicans going out and hiring on a, you know, we'll pay you per name basis. It's amazing. Ah, what tangled webs we weave, yeah? as Shakespeare said. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Teamsters President James P. Hoffa stopped in Milwaukee to blast the Bush administration record on jobs loss and urge working and middle-class people to vote for John Kerry on November 2nd. Hoffa said politics is the key to protecting jobs.
This all starts with politics. I mean, we've got to go out and have an administration that believes in having a strong middle class, that believes we have to have a good middle class, that pays taxes, that supports the system, that consumes. That's the whole idea. The money comes in, people have good homes, good lives, America thrives.
As he spoke to reporters outside the former Kelly Docks manufacturing operation in Milwaukee that shut down despite being profitable in order to ship the jobs to Mexico for the cheap labor costs, Hoffa said it's vital that working people not sit out this election.
We cannot send good American jobs overseas, and this administration wants to send every job we have overseas. We've got to turn that around. Politics is the answer. I call on all middle-class people, all working people, go to the polls on November 2. You know what to do on November 2. You got to go to the polls, pull that lever for John Kerry.
Hoffa said America needs a president who will fight to keep American jobs and also fight to change the thinking and the ethic among corporations that cheaper labor is better. Hoffa said that undermines the American dream of having decent jobs to support families and a thriving middle class.
According to a recent report by the Department of Homeland Security, the nation's 45,000 federal airport security screeners suffer from low morale, understaffing, and excessive overtime. The report also found that the performance of federal workers compared to those of private companies when trying to detect hidden weapons was equally poor. According to a source who worked for Advanced Interactive Systems, the company hired to train Transportation Security Administration personnel in the days following September 11th, the report reflects the government's desire to give the appearance that airports were secure by the end of 2001. The source said that right up until December 30th of that year, AIS was sending messages to employees that the training was nowhere near complete and Congress would have no choice but to extend it. TSA employees have little outlet for complaints. In August, the Merit Systems Protection Board ruled that they are not protected under the same whistleblower rights afforded to other federal employees. The board said the government can hire, discipline, and terminate screeners without regard to any other law. The agency is currently facing a 22% attrition rate, up from 15% last year.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new book, living wage laws in cities around the country aren't always resulting in actual higher wages for workers who live there. Stephanie Luce's book, Fighting for a Living Wage, says most cities have not done a good job implementing living wage ordinances. In some cases, they have not assigned a single staff person to do so. Some cities, though, have made living wage laws work. According to Acorn, nearly $1 billion in increased wages have been won through the living wage movement.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
And welcome back. Yeah, it is my generation, I guess. It's 27 minutes before the hour. Al Franken is apparently on the hit list. This entertaining bit of news from the sexual harassment lawsuit against Bill O'Reilly. Amazing. It's, you know, I don't know what to say beyond just amazing. I read the actual filed complaint against defendant Bill O'Reilly by plaintiff Andrea Macris. There's the usual salacious stuff. During the course of the dinner, O'Reilly repeatedly propositioned the women, singing the praises of telephone sex, offered to telephone them both, suggested that the three should go to a hotel together and have the time of their lives, and so on. Here, you know, he's got this book, Who's Looking Out for You? And he's, you know, going around promoting this thing, talking about this is helping people figure out how to know that they're, you know, who's looking out for you? How to get what you want, right? And so in the course of this, hang on just a second here. I got it. This is if I've got it. I don't. LMNO. Nope. Thought I had it. Anyhow, I had a clip here that I wanted to share with you. During the course of the... So, O'Reilly further suggested... Yeah, this Who's Looking Out for You book. He's like, you know, here's how to get what you want, get what you need, and things like that. And then he's having dinner with these two women, one of whom works for him, right? And O'Reilly further suggested that the women need to be trained so they'd be equipped and ready to go when a, quote, real man shows up in your lives, end quote, and offered, quote, lessons, end quote. O'Reilly further suggested they use their sexuality to their advantage so they'd have power over men. Otherwise, men would have power over them. Plaintiff was extremely embarrassed and protested, Bill, you're my boss. Very strange. And it gets weirder and kinkier, and I'm not going to get into that, frankly, because I don't care. You know, it's like, you know, what Bill O'Reilly does in his sex life or tries to do and doesn't get away with, you know, I frankly don't care about. I think what's interesting is, however, the conservative take on morality. There's this notion, and it's a pretty pervasive notion among conservatives, that morality is defined by what people do in private. And certainly at one level, morality is defined by what people do in private. However, where the conservatives miss it is the other half of the equation, and that is what we do in public. This is, you know, the other half of the equation, what we do in public. This is what you could call liberal morality, as it were. How are we collectively conducting ourselves? This is the great divide in America between those people who believe that morality is what you do in your bedroom and or how you conduct yourself in your private life, and those people who believe that morality is defined by what we do publicly as a society. And the former tend to be the conservatives and the latter tend to be liberals. And you know, and both acknowledge that there is some place for the other, but they have radically different levels of emphasis. And so here's O'Reilly, who has made a career out of promoting private morality and ridiculing people who have failures in their private morality. And frankly, I would be amazed to find any person who could say that they have no flaws in their private morality. But, you know, O'Reilly, you know, climbing all over, whoever it may be, right? But the issue of our public morality, what are we doing as a society? Are there hungry among us? Are there naked among us? Not in the Bill O'Reilly context, but you know what I mean. I'm reciting the biblical list, right? This is from Matthew 25, without getting too religious on you. Are there homeless among us? Are those in prison being visited? Are those who are sick being taken care of? This is the essence of real morality. And it doesn't get discussed by conservatives. It doesn't get addressed by them. They say, hey, take care of yourself, buddy. Need bootstraps? Actually, that's the flip side of it. They say, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And folks say, well, it'd be nice if I had some bootstraps to pull myself up by. But here's where it gets really weird is when O'Reilly then makes the further comment to this woman who's suing him. He says, and I quote, I'm quoting from the deposition, from the complaint, if you cross Fox News Channel, it's not just me, it's Fox President Roger Ailes who will get after you. I am the street guy out front making loud noises about the issues, but Ailes operates behind the scenes, strategizes, makes things happen so that one day, bam, person gets what's coming to them but never sees it coming. Look at Al Franken. One day he's going to get a knock on his door and life as he's known it will change forever. That day will happen, trust me. And then later on, he said, Al Franken's finished, and he's going to be sorry he ever took Fox News Channel on. Quote, end quote. Pretty spooky stuff. So, your thoughts on this, 1-8, and other topics. We've got also this story, remarkable story in today's Wall Street Journal about retirees. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Paul in Bradenton, Florida, has been on the line for a few minutes. Hey, Paul, thanks for waiting.
Thank you. Bush pulled out that word last night again, liberal.
Yeah.
The question I would have is how many, quote, liberals in Congress had a baseball stadium built for them courtesy of the taxpayers like he did? How many liberals in Congress made millions off the savings and loans that the taxpayers bailed out like his family did? And it just goes on and on and on. It seems like the government and entitlements, according to George Bush, is exclusively reserved for the wealthy.
Yeah, amen. Well said, Paul. This is... welcome to the world of George W. Bush. I mean, and as I said earlier, I think that this is how he was raised, frankly. I think this is just how he was raised. He was raised out of touch with average people. His family hasn't associated with average people in four generations or longer. And, these people get this sense that, I am sure that George W. Bush thinks that he is part of normal mainstream America. And he goes to these events and he surrounds himself with people who are corporate executives and they're in their $600 Armani suits or whatever, $1,000 suits and he just thinks this is normal. This is mainstream America. More retirees may see health cuts. This from the front page of the Wall Street Journal. I believe it was the front page. No, maybe not. Actually, it's an inside. Anyhow, Helen E. Schultz wrote this great article in today's journal. She says it better than I could. She says, some large employers will be allowed to cut health benefits for more retirees starting January 1st, thanks to a little-known provision in the new tax bill. These things are going to be popping up for the next year. I guarantee it. They're just going to keep on popping up. And this, a little-known provision in the new tax bill. Currently, here's how it works. If a company right now wants to cut the health benefits that they have promised to their retirees, they want to cut them. Under current law, they can only cut 10% of them in any 1 year out of five, or 20% over a total of 5 years. They can only cut 10% of their retirees off from their health benefits or reduce them. Well, under this change in this law that was embedded in this tax bill, employers can cut costs by the same amount, as Ellen Schultz says, by the same amount they would have saved by cutting the number of covered retirees. In other words, under the old rules, you actually had to go to the retirees and say, hey, you're toast. Now, one of the ways, of course, that they cut covered retirees is by the retirees dying off. But they would have to have, you know, 10% per year of the retirees just vanishing or cut them off. Now, the rule has changed, and they can simply cut the health benefits for all retirees by 10% a year or 20% over a five-year period. She notes Lucian Technologies, which withdrew a total of $1.2 billion from its pension plan to cover retiree health benefits between 1999 and the end of 2002, lobbied forcefully for the change, though it will affect other companies as well. Last month, Lucian Technologies eliminated benefits for 10% of covered retirees and dependents, saying the move will save it $16 million a year starting in 2005. Gee! Almost enough for a few weeks of their CEO's salary and total benefit package. Members of the Lucian Retirees Organization in an email to lawmakers said, quote, it is simply unfair to allow companies who have already received the tax and other financial benefits of the pension asset transfers to renege on their commitment to maintain retiree benefits, a commitment which was a condition of the initial transfer. DuPont is doing this, SBC Communications, Allegheny Technologies, Quest Communications, United States Steel, Marathon Oil. You know, in corporate America, increasingly it seems there is no morality whatsoever in corporate America. They get their hands around your neck, look out. 1-866, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I just have a question. This has really been rattling around for a while. I don't even know how to pronounce it.
I can't say it either.
The politicization of the Secret Service, yeah. And what we've been seeing with the Bush campaign.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen if, and I hope it does happen, Kerry gets in? Because, I mean, basically they have been aligning against him. And I don't know if you heard Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Yesterday, but it turns out, at least according to her, that it really was the FBI knocking on doors and doing intimidation. So we've got two major supposedly crime-fighting organizations that are designed to protect the president, at least the U.S. Secret Service is, that is now politicized and very much pulled into the Bush camp.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what do you think? I mean, this is frightening to me. I don't know what to think.
Well, what happens is what you saw 6 years ago, and a little longer than that, actually, I suppose, when Bill Clinton was, you know, being sniped at from members of his own Secret Service detail. They had been working for Republicans for 12 years. Republicans had controlled the White House. And so they were basically hiring, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, hiring Republicans. And 12 years is a long time. You know, there's a lot of turnover. And relatively speaking, civil service is not a huge amount of turnover, but there's enough turnover that you can bring in another 5, 10, 15, 20% of the employee workforce. And so if Kerry gets elected, he's going to inherit an FBI and a Secret Service that has been spun politically by the Bush administration in a way that they may well politically sabotage him.
It's frightening to me because, I mean, at least when Bill Clinton came in, while it was absolutely true that 12 years the Secret Service had been doing it, this is unprecedented, Tom. I mean, the Secret Service has never been so focused on the abrogation of civil rights and the, you know, the fundamental. I don't even know what to call it. I mean, it's just, it's unprecedented. And he's not only going to have somebody that's supposed to be defending him physically, but defending him politically. And it's appalling.
Yeah. And you're not just seeing it in the police services. I mean, this is happening all over the place. Chuck, thanks for the call and raising the issue. I mean, it is an important one. Mayor Tom Barrett of Milwaukee is a little concerned. It'd be interesting to know if Mayor Barrett is a Democrat. And if Milwaukee County Executive Scott Walker is a Republican, because he asked for 800, he asked for 900, almost a million ballots, And instead, the county executive only gave him $679,000. And Barrett says that's fewer than were prepared in the 2000 and 2002 elections. And he's expecting a huge turnout in Milwaukee, and he wants extra ballots. And the county executive, Scott Walker, says he's not going to print them. He's not going to print them. Chaos could occur, and we're not going to print them. Pretty amazing stuff. Philip in Medford, Massachusetts on the line. Hey, Philip, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, what's up? Something on the debate last night just made my jaw drop, and it was the quote when Bush says, we'll honor our commitment. They were talking about Social Security, mm-hmm. and he said, we'll honor our commitment to our seniors, but for our young, for our children and our grandchildren, we need to have a different strategy. And I'm wondering what that might be. I mean,
well, he's already said what it would be. Yeah, in fact, there's a fascinating op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal today on page two or page four. It's one of the two inside pages, the first two inside pages, in which the Wall Street Journal says, or the writer in the Wall Street Journal says, Bush is going to cut Social Security benefits by 29% right off the bat. I mean, that, you know, for anybody who is not the current crop of retirees, those people who are coming up. So, you know, expect to see a cut in benefits for everybody else, number one. Right. And number two, of course, he's getting huge numbers of dollars from people in the financial sector, I mean, and from corporations in the financial sector, because they're just salivating. I mean, you know, you're looking at $1 trillion in Social Security, and they, you know, think of the fees that they could make controlling those funds.
Right.
They're just absolutely drooling over this thing, and he wants to give it to them, and he will, and we'll all be the poorer for it, and you'll have another group of people who make another couple $100 million a year, or $1 billion a year off the American taxpayer, and you know, welcome to Bush's America, Philip. Thanks for the call and for raising the issue. It's an important one. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
A criminal investigation is underway over Halliburton's $180 million payment to Nigerian officials for a natural gas project back when Dick Cheney was the CEO. Critics call this bribery, but in many countries, bribes are just part of the political culture. Why should Dick's company be punished for being sensitive to local customs? You give money to politicians and they give favors to you. We do it all the time here in the U.S., only we call it a campaign contribution, and no one seems to object. South of the border, it's la mordita, the little bite, and in the Middle East, it's bakshish, No matter what you call it, it's smart business. I'm Zena Fobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. As the presidential election looms closer, Americans' prosperity has become a central campaign issue, and a new report by the Working Poor Families Project throws new light on a highly charged debate. More than one quarter of all U.S. workers are paid poverty wages, and 20 million children live in families that don't earn enough to meet basic needs, according to a shocking new report entitled Working Hard, Falling Short. Brandon Roberts is co-author of the publication.
9.2 million working families are low income. These are families that are struggling to make ends meet and to advance to the middle class.
Robert says there's a huge and growing disparity between America's low-income service labor force and businesses' demand for highly skilled workers. He says there needs to be a coordinated effort between states and the federal government on programs that help low-wage workers.
Across the country, we have a very uneven commitment from state to state in how we assist low-income, hard-working families to get ahead and to stay ahead. And, of course, our key recommendation is engender a national discussion and examination of how we can better utilize our resources and our public systems.
Robert suggests a minimum wage hike as a simple measure that could be taken to immediately lift some of the financial burden off the backs of working families.
One-third of these low-income working families have a parent without a high school degree. If you take a typical family of four with two working adults, if both of those workers were employed full-time year-round and earned the minimum wage, together their salary is going to equal $21,424. That's far short of what it takes for a family to be economically self-sufficient.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's becoming more precarious for failing to toe the line in what I believe in. Sounds like freedom to me.
Welcome back. The U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq has been the most misguided policy since the Vietnam War, according to an open letter signed by...
Some liberal, some lefty, some anti-war protester, some hippie.
No, by 500 U.S. national security specialists. Security Scholars for a Sensible Foreign Policy, S3FP, says the current situation in Iraq could have been much better had the Bush administration heeded the advice of some of its most experienced career military and foreign service officers. Barry Posen, the Ford International Professor of Political Science at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, one of the organizers of S3FP, says, "We're advising the administration, which is already in a deep hole, to stop digging." Sounds like a good plan. Among the signers are six of the last seven presidents of the American Political Science Association, and professors teach in more than 150 colleges and universities in 40 states. Their critique mirrors an unprecedented statement released by 27 retired top-ranking foreign service and military officials last June, any whom of which said they had voted for Bush in the two, many of whom said they had voted for Bush in the 2000 election. That group, called Diplomats for Change, accused the administration of leading the country into an ill-planned and costly war from which exit is uncertain, and charged that the March 2003 invasion was a disaster. As their name suggested, they called for Bush to be defeated in 2004. Boy, when you've got the policy folks, when you've got the Foreign Service speaking out against you, when you've got, you know, CIA agents leaking bad news to the press because they, you know, they're trying to protect their agency. I mean, this whole thing about the CIA at war with the White House is, you know, apparently a very real problem right now. And then 500 of them come out, create an organization, Security Scholars for Sensible Foreign Policy, and write an open letter. I mean, this administration has to be just dizzy from all the slaps they've been getting. It almost enough to make you feel sorry for them until you think of all the people who are dying right now as a result of these policies. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to Ben Birch and Mike Toth for our archives, to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company, where I will be tomorrow, to the folks in our chat room, to Jay for our music, and to you for showing up. Thanks so much. Do appreciate it. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike